to another week of the Kauffman TSN 990 studios in beautiful snowy downtown Westmount, Quebec. You got to turn on your mic, my friend.
I did.
You know, we've been in the studio all damn day.
I did. Oh, is that what we did? Okay. It's been a long day, folks. Dave Kauffman, we are live.
Yes, we are.
I'm ready now.
Good. How are you, Jay?
Excellent.
Good. Good. Busy day? Busy Trade Center-y day for you?
Yeah. It feels like a day where everything happened, yet nothing happened.
What was the everything?
I don't know. It just, I was running around as if everything was happening, yet nothing was happening.
It was I don't know how they filled their programming today. RDS started their coverage.
I know how they filled it.
RDS started their coverage at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Was it really live at 6, though? Like, they were on the air, the anchors were there at the desk, ready to go?
I saw a commercial before I went to bed that said that coverage starts at 6 a.m. I did not get up at 6 to watch it.
Well, come on, Dave. How irresponsible? How journalistically irresponsible of you not to get up and watch at 6 a.m.?
There goes my integrity.
There it is. That's it. You're done.
Consider that the scoop of the night.
You can leave, sir. No, I don't know why they do it so early. I guess, I don't know. I have no answer for you. I mean, the first trade came in at around 10:30.
Around when I saw you.
I think
you
we were talking, yeah. And then they poured in a little bit after 3. So really, you know, start that bad boy up at 2 o'clock and you're good.
The one intelligent tweet that I saw on the matter was from my good friend Max Harris, Max the Guru, who said that it's not exactly like people are complaining, where are my darts and where are my billiards, that's normally on at that hour.
True. Where's my world's strongest man competition?
I want to see the guy pull a truck with his teeth.
Yeah. No, nobody was complaining about that. And, you know, TSN does great coverage of it. I mean, they do the best of with what they have at the time. And it's interesting. The rumors are interesting. But literally, they're making the best of nothing, which is good, I guess.
I'm not one for rumors and innuendo.
No, neither am I. As people may notice on this show, we do not speculate on trades. We do not predict trades. It's ridiculous to do.
No, you know what, Jay? The only time I've made a prediction on air was our World Series bet.
That's right.
I don't know how I fluked that out of the Cardinals winning in 7.
Yeah. Don't remind me about that.
That was funny, man.
Yeah. I was close, too.
Sure. About as close as you could. You were one out away twice.
One out away twice. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Tell me about it. I remember that. Yeah.
We're going to talk a lot of baseball tonight. We're going to examine Black History Month. Jay and I were fortunate enough to have had a conversation with Sharon Robinson this morning. Jackie Robinson's daughter.
Very fortunate.
Wow. That was really cool, man. And I can't wait to play it for all of you. We also spoke with Delino DeShields, which
we were also fortunate to do.
Delino was my favorite expo growing up. And as much for the way he carried himself off the field as he did on it. And that hasn't changed. Delino is a man of high integrity.
And conviction.
Absolutely.
And as you will find out.
We also have Marquise Grissom live on the program in about 10 minutes' time.
I'm stoked for that.
Yeah, so am I. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Marquise. Grip. Grip is in the house. I love that.
Who we found out today is Randy Tiemann's favorite expo of all time.
Yeah. Randy told us personally to say hi. So we have to remember to say hi for Randy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think we can manage.
We can do that.
We have a busy show as well. We'll be hearing from Mike Cohen around midnight. He's got some news about Gary Carter that all of you will find interesting. Wes Marzkel from the Darcys, they're in town on Friday night. We've also got a couple of tickets to give away to their show. Transloriate comes back into the fold. Can't wait. You didn't even know that. Surprise. Transloriate's on the show.
I didn't know that?
Well, I don't know. We didn't talk about it.
No.
Maybe you saw it on Twitter or something. But
yeah, I might have.
And Dave Barkley, Dave for Cave. Dave is the sole Canadian remaining in the competition for the MLB Fan Cave.
Okay.
Which is
this one I didn't know about, Kauffman.
Dave for Cave. Everybody's got to get behind Dave for Cave. He made it to the top 30. And if he wins, he gets to hole himself up in New York City all summer watching baseball with the MLB Network. Kind of a dream job, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if there's one thing that New York City needs, it's another Canadian.
Yeah, there's clearly not enough.
How about one working legally?
Stop it, Dave. what are you implying here, sir?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing at all.
Okay.
No, not even less than anything. Can we talk, before we go to Marquise, let's talk about the Habs for a few minutes.
Okay.
And obviously we will welcome your calls throughout the night. We also have a $50 gift certificate for Brewtopia. You can send me a tweet at The Kaufman Show or J1 at J-Pub Radio. We're going to be giving away $50 to the person who comes up with the best idea for a Gary Carter tribute. The best, most original idea that the city of Montreal could come up with to honor Gary Carter. I don't want to hear Pinot Boulevard being renamed. I don't want to hear
Metro Station.
Or the Olympic Stadium. Let's do better. Let's use our heads. Let's think outside the box and try and figure out a proper spot. So the Montreal Canadiens.
The Montreal Canadiens.
Not a subject that I normally touch on, but...
Well, we do. We do. When it's relevant.
When it's relevant, but not with the... I don't know why. I maybe sell myself short because I'm not there covering the team on a day-to-day basis, and I know that there's so many people at the station that are. I'm a season ticket holder. I'm a fan. I've lived here all my life, and I've been watching hockey all my life. Those are all good reasons to feel comfortable commenting on it. It's about not taking each other for granted. So the management takes the fans for granted, and the fans take the team for granted. And that's something that I've seen with another sports franchise in the city. And we all know where they're playing right now. And I'm not implying that the Canadians are going to fly the way of the dodo bird and go play somewhere else. But at a certain point, everybody gets to their limit, Jay. And I think that we're almost at that point right now where people are just fed up. You see the anger, the vitriol on Twitter right now. You hear the boos at the stadium, at the Bell Center. It seems like everybody's at their fill. And we've talked a lot on this show about how there's now a generation of fans that don't know what it feels like to win. And it's getting ugly. And there seems to be just so much indecision and speculation. And I mean, we saw this weekend with the scoop and then with the story that was retracted. And there just seems to be no clear decision-making process that's at least, there's no transparency. And in this social media age, that's really something that people are demanding. Everybody's taking everybody for granted right now. And at one point, and it's on the fans, they will have it up to here. They will not want to be taken for granted anymore.
Interesting. I like where you're going with this, but this is what happens when you have a franchise that's mired in secrecy. The general manager doesn't want to speak to the public. So when you are mired in secrecy and people don't know what's going on, at least a little bit of what's going on in the back rooms and the offices, well, speculation, rumor, and innuendo will hit hard. And we saw that. We saw that in the last few days. As much as this is a private enterprise, the team belongs to the city as well. And people deserve to know what is happening with their team.
The last time, Jay, that fans were kept in the dark like this, then that was the Expos. And people lost their cool and they had enough. And I don't know how to put it really any better than the song that we're going to be going out on. And maybe people should listen up, but that mystique is varying thus, Jay. And it's freaking me out. And it's time to stop taking each other for granted. This is the Kaufman Show, and we'll be back.
Violins and tambourines, and this is what we think they mean. It's hard to say, it's sad but true. Kinda dumb, so are you. When the mystic varies thus, you can send a man to bury us. It's hard to say, it's sad but true. I'm kinda dumb, and so are you. The last of the unplugged jams. The last of the unplugged jams. The last of the unplugged
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. Got to say, I'm kind of excited about our next guest, Jay.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm loving all this expo talk.
There's been a lot of it lately.
It's been very comforting. It's felt very good with all the sadness of the last couple of weeks. It seems that everybody's rallying around the expos again, and they're really high point of people's conversation. I don't know if you heard, but today they announced the city of Montreal will be taking submissions for the Gary Carter, whatever they end up doing for Gary Carter. And it's good to keep baseball's good name alive in this town. We're going to try and do it every week. We're doing it tonight, and we're going to bring in our next guest right now. You might remember him trolling in center field for the Montreal Expos and a couple of other teams, including Atlanta, where he won the World Series. Let's bring in Marquise Grissom. Welcome back to Montreal, Marquise.
Thanks you guys for having me.
Of course. How are you?
I'm good. Can't complain. Life is good.
Yeah? How was your winter? What'd you get up to?
Well, actually, I just got married last Saturday.
Hey, congratulations.
And kids are fine. I'm good. Good point and good time in my life right now, so I'm very excited about starting a new life, and things are good.
That's fantastic news.
Grip, I had no idea that you got married. Congratulations, man.
Thanks a lot.
Grip, we're talking a lot about, it's Black History Month, and we want to talk about Jackie Robinson. And, you know, especially coming up as an expo and the history of Jackie in this town, what did he mean to you?
Well, you know, playing baseball here in Atlanta as a little kid, you know, we heard a lot about Hank Aaron and what he endured, you know, coming up playing a game of baseball, and it was more Hank Aaron than Jackie Robinson. But, you know, as I got older, as a young man, I kind of, you know, read the history and ran into people who had a little bit more experience than I did, you know, coming up in the league. And Jackie Robinson, Hank Aaron, Joe Black, all those guys, you know, meant the world to me as a Black athlete, and who paved the way for us to have this great opportunity to play this lovely game of baseball. And I kind of went out my whole career and during my lifetime and tried to mold myself to be an example in the game of baseball and outside the game of baseball. And, you know, that's how those guys rubbed off on me, and that's what I took from those guys as a baseball player and as a Black man.
Where do you see it going down the road, Marquise? The numbers of African-American players in baseball are decreasing every year, and that is a concern to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's definitely a concern of mine, too. You know, growing up playing baseball is something that I get an opportunity to see little kids today do the same thing that I did as a black kid growing up playing baseball. And I think we have to go back to the education.
How do we do that?
Well, we got to have places for our kids to play. You know, here in Atlanta where I'm at, and you go to the black neighborhoods, and there are baseball fields, but they're not operating. Kids nowadays, a lot of our athletes are playing football and basketball. And I think you have to have the education of the fundamentals of the game of baseball. Baseball is a grueling game. It's a tough game. And a little bit different than any other sport. And we just have to educate our kids with the fundamentals of the game, and that is the toughest thing that I've seen, that I experience now when I'm dealing with kids, is getting that basic fundamental of the game down pat.
Marquise, Major League Baseball franchises are spending a tremendous amount of money and exporting that money in order to bring in players from South America and Japan. Do you feel that they're not spending enough money in the United States trying to work on their own urban youth and those who, you know, to try and promote baseball amongst the urban youth and those who are not as well off?
Yeah, Jay, no doubt. I definitely think, you go to Dominican Republic, and I'm not going to say they're not doing things here. They're doing things here, but not to the extent that are acceptable in my eyes, and probably a few more other baseball players that have played this game. But it's definitely a lot more that could be done here in the United States in the inner city. And that's where I kind of channeled my focus when I finished playing baseball, and to go back in the inner city and educate our kids and develop our kids and build baseball facilities here in the United States in the inner city to give our kids opportunity to grow at the game. And I feel that, Major League Baseball have taken it a different direction. And again, like I said, they are doing things here, but just not enough.
We're in conversation with Expo's great Marquise Grissom on The Kauffman Show, Jay Farrar and Dave Kauffman, Jimmy G on the board. Marquise, can we talk a little bit about your Montreal days?
Oh, yeah. No problem.
Good, because, as the kid that I was growing up and watching you play, I'm very excited. We also have Delino on the show tonight, and that's two-thirds of the Upper Deck Rookie Threats card.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't quite get Larry on the show.
No.
So.
We're still working on Booger. But now I wanted to ask you about Gary Carter, because you were a young kid when Gary played on the team in 92, and I'm wondering what kind of an effect he had on you.
That's correct. It was just a tremendous loss with Gary Carter. Sad day for me and my family. I know I talked about Gary a lot, to my kids and definitely to my older boys who had the opportunity to watch him play in the latter part of his career. But, the greatest thing I remember and the greatest impact that Gary had on myself was I kept wondering to myself, why is this guy who's a Hall of Famer, towards the end of his career in 89 and 90, 91, 92, with the great opportunity to play with him, why is this guy coming in here working out early, lifting weights, stretching, running? Me as a young kid watching him, I didn't think I would never get to that point to do those things. I didn't think it was important for me to get there early and stretch and lift weights. So after talking to Gary Carter, he pretty much educated on me. He's, telling me, son, if you want to play this game a long time, these are some of the things you have to do. And, maybe a year or two after that, I kind of got a little bit older, 25, 26 years old, and I kind of understood what he was doing to be able to play as long as he did and have the ability to go out there and play at that level for so many years. And definitely was a lesson learned for me, and he pretty much helped me turn my career around right there, taking care of my body and being able to be able to go there and be successful on the baseball field.
I was asked by a fan on Twitter tonight to get your opinion on what you think would be a suitable tribute for the city of Montreal to do for Gary Carter.
Hmm.
We've all had the same reaction. Yeah. We're not exactly sure what would be the appropriate thing. We thought maybe Marquise Grissom can help us out.
That's a tough one. I just don't think we all can do enough. You know, I think the kid was the kid. A great impact on not only the city of Montreal, but everywhere he played and everywhere he stepped, everywhere he went. The smile on his face, the attitude he had towards the game, the work ethics. And, you know, he's a prime example of what baseball, being a Major League Baseball player, is all about, on and off the field. And that was a great kid. So I don't know. You know, that's a tough one for me.
Well, that's okay. We're going to continue debating it for a long time. If you get the million-dollar idea, please, by all means.
Let us know.
Yeah, give us the scoop, Marquise.
I'll shop it around on this end in Atlanta, Georgia, and see what we come up with.
There are a lot of wonderful baseball minds on the 30 different Peachtree Avenues in Atlanta, Georgia. So we'd love to get that from you, Marquise. We're going to finish up right now, and I want to ask you, you're still doing the you're still working with Smoltz, right?
Yeah, we're still having the Smoltz Grissom Whitback Classic. You know, the 4th of July weekend, kind of changed it around the last couple of years from Memorial Day to the 4th of July, and this is our 15th annual coming up this year.
Fantastic. It's great to know that you've become such a beacon for the community and for urban areas in baseball, Marquise. It's so important. And here we have the same problem that you were mentioning for Atlanta. All of the baseball fields are gone. They're all soccer fields right now. And it's hard to imagine if the people who haven't even been born yet don't get the opportunity to appreciate baseball and learn it from the grassroots level. How are they going to like it when they're older?
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, I figured, you know, we talk about the problem. You know, I had the opportunity to talk to Jimmy Lee Solomon last year on a radio talk show here in Atlanta, and we talked about the inner city baseball and our kids getting the opportunity to play the game. And, you know, I took it upon myself at that moment. You know, I didn't get the answer that I was looking for, so I took it upon myself to, you know, do what I can do in the community and try to make that mark and turn things around for the kids. And I've got that opportunity here in Atlanta, and, you know, things are going well. We got kids graduating from high school, living 100%, and going on to college, you know, maybe close to $4.5 million in the last 6 years of scholarship money. And so I've had the opportunity to try to turn this thing around. And, you know, I'm pretty much willing to go anywhere to give a kid a chance to play this great game of baseball, because I had so many great people to have an impact on my life and helping me with the great opportunity to go out there and learn the game and play the game at a high level.
Well, Marquise,
and I think we just need more people to go back and try to help and give.
Whatever we can do to help you get that word out, we'd be more than happy to, Marquise.
The website is mgba.org. Is that right, Rip?
That's correct, mgba.org.
Okay, perfect.
Marquise, thank you so much for your time tonight. We really appreciate it. Hope to catch up again in the summer.
When are you coming back to Montreal?
I don't know, Jay. I'm going to try to get a chance to come back sometime, probably in September.
All right, you come see me.
I will do, man. I appreciate it. Tell your brother I said hey.
I will, absolutely.
And, oh, and before we let you go, Randy Thiemann sends his best.
Yes, sir. Tell him I said hello. Everybody in Montreal, all the great fans, I appreciate everything over the years. You guys are the best, and I really appreciate everything.
Marquise, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Dave.
Have a great night.
Take care, Greg.
I'm just going to sit here and smile for a second. You go ahead and talk.
Awesome.
Just for all of you scoring at home, that was Jay with the falsetto, not me.
Yeah, let me tell you something, folks. I met this man during the summer. He came down. We had lunch at McLean's. He loves my brother's video and the song, the Expos tribute. Came down with Kevin Malone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm a name dropper now.
That's
I don't
okay.
care.
You're allowed.
I don't care. I'm allowed.
You just can't make fun of me when I name drop.
Yeah. Well, okay, fine.
Well, it's one or the other, dude.
Yeah, right. I'm kind of not wanting to name drop anymore just so I can make fun of you.
Can you name drop our last guest? Because that was really cool.
Our last guest?
Yeah, the guy who was just on.
Marquise Grissom?
Yeah, name drop that one all you want.
And let me tell you something. This man is genuine, a complete genuine human being. And he's really funny, too, actually. His stories are great. And he came down, and we were out, and we went out later on that night with Rondell White and Cliff Floyd. And,
name dropper.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm doing it now. And we had a great, great night. And he's just a class act and a good person. And I take a look into his foundation at mgba.org. And see what this man is doing for the community. It's fantastic.
We'll talk a little bit more about it after we air our interview with Delino DeShields, but it's amazing to see how these expos have really picked up that mantle and are doing their best to live the life that Jackie Robinson wanted to carry forward. Something about this town, man.
We mold character.
Or we were very lucky to have had the characters, you know, they didn't grow up here.
That's right.
They just came here, and we were very lucky to have them.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, those two guys were two of the most popular expos in the early 90s, not only because of the way they played, but like you said, the way they carry themselves. And nothing but class. Nothing but class. I mean, I was a teenager growing up watching these guys, and it was the ultimate thrill. We don't realize how lucky we were to watch these guys play. When you think about it, think about some of the players they have nowadays. It's just not the same.
No,
I don't want to be old man like, no, oh, our generation's the best.
We've said that a lot lately, Jay, especially with Gary Carter's passing. They don't make them like they used to.
No, they don't.
And as you know, it was, I'll tell you, when I was at the Queen Elizabeth talking to all the Blue Jays when they were here on their winter tour, and I'm talking to Alex Anthopoulos, and we're both telling basically the same story of how we heard when Delino was traded and we were both crying. It meant something back then. When Delino was traded, we had no idea who Pedro Martinez was, but we all knew who Delino was, and that was a tough one for a 12-year-old kid to swallow.
Yep. Yeah. Transactions back then were a little bit different.
They sure were.
Yeah. We didn't have 12-hour TV episodes on. We just sat and cried, and that was it. We're like, oh, dude, we lost our dude. That's it. You know? Oh,
can you, you know, we'll talk about Twitter a little later. I have some, it's the great equalizer.
The great equalizer.
It's the great equalizer.
Okay.
That was really awesome. Thank you to Marquise Grissom. When we come back. We'll hear from Sharon Robinson. This is the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Jay and I know, are very excited to speak with our next guest.
I am. It's actually a great, great thrill for me personally.
This is a huge honor. She is the daughter of the most important person to ever play baseball. And I say that without any exaggeration.
He's not being facetious, that's for sure.
No, not in the least. Welcome to the show, Sharon Robinson. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I was in San Miguel last week, and there was a whole contingency of Canadians there. So
yeah, we like to get away in the wintertime.
They were so excited to hear me speak, because I told them that the Canadians had welcomed my parents with open arms.
Well, it's actually interesting. I think it was almost about a year ago to the day that I met you on De Gaspé Street in Montreal.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And that was a wonderful day when...
It was a wonderful day.
The U.S. government put up a plaque on the home that your mom and dad lived in when they came to Montreal.
Right.
It was... that was a day, for me at least, it was... a real window to the history of our town and
oh, isn't it nice?
Just how much Montreal played a part. And I'm not saying, if anything, Montreal was lucky that Jackie was here. It's not the other way around.
Well, it went both ways. They were lucky to have that first year, you know, a place to be, just feel like they could be themselves and not have to have the fears and negativity all the time.
Did your dad ever talk about facing any kind of racism in Montreal?
No, he never did, because he talked about facing it when they left Montreal and traveled, particularly down south, or if Philadelphia can be considered down south. But certainly, no, nothing in Montreal. They really had a wonderful friendship with the... Oh, geez, now his name has skipped my mind. They were both in, he was a journalist. Sam Malton.
Oh, I'm not familiar with him.
No, Sam Malton and his wife were really good friends, and they did social things together as well as, you know, being supportive of my parents being in Montreal. And he's the one that wrote the article when they lifted my father up when the team won the championship. And he said his first time he'd seen a white mob run after a black man to lift him up in celebration.
It was out of love and not out of lynching, I believe,
exactly,
is what he wrote. And it's amazing what a tie your dad has on this town, and for having spent maybe six months here.
We love coming up there and love knowing that Montreal specifically and Canadians in general were. You know, supported the integration of baseball.
I want to talk a bit about the integration of baseball and the larger scale of it and what it has meant to America since.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 40 years since your dad passed away.
Yes.
And I'd like you to comment a bit on the developments for the African American in the United States since, in the last 40 years.
Is this African Americans in general?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Well, certainly, you know, my father passed away 40 years ago, and at that point, he was really working on economic justice in America and political justice. So, you know, still we had made quite a few strides in this country as African American in America as African Americans, but there was a great deal of work to be done, and that continues to be the case 40 years later. There's always work to be done. A struggle such as this for racial justice or gender justice or religious, whatever it is, it's an ongoing struggle. So no one expects that things will be great just because you've gotten some laws passed. Because as we know, laws can be turned around, and people's attitudes are a hard thing to completely turn around. There's always an issue with attitudes and behavior towards others that are different than you. So that being said, my mother and I were invited. We went to the White House this past week, so with President and the First Lady, President Obama and the First Lady.
Were you at that wonderful concert last week?
No, we missed the concert because I was just flying in from Mexico. But we attended they had groundbreaking for the African American Museum of History and Culture, and then the President and First Lady invited the group over to the White House for a reception afterwards. And so that just reminded us, being in the White House and the sort of the beauty of seeing photographs of past presidents, and mixed in that mix is a African-American family, was really a thrill for us. And then to be able to meet, not we had met the president before, but to meet him in the White House in his territory was really, really thrilling. So my father, you know, wished my father could have been alive to have witnessed that moment. And I'm just very grateful that my mother, who turns 90 this year, was was alive for this big change in America.
When your father passed away, one of the last things that he was quoted as saying at that World Series where he threw out the first pitch was how he longs for the day when there will be an African-American manager in baseball.
Now, yeah, it was
Frank Robinson,
the playing
of course,
field was integrated.
Right.
But we have to go beyond the playing field and all the way up to, you know, ownership, and management was the next step.
Well, let's take it a step further. How do you think Jackie would have reacted knowing that there's a black president?
Oh, he would be thrilled. He would be, it would just be, it was almost like the integration of baseball. I mean, many of the Negro Leaguers during my father's time, they didn't believe that baseball would be integrated in their time. So he would be thrilled to have lived to see the day that we had the first African-American in American politics and American president. And so, like I said, we were thrilled just to be in the White House and to be a full witness to this change in America, that they had accepted an African-American man as their leader. So it's quite remarkable and quite wonderful.
You're listening to The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar. We're joined by Sharon Robinson. Jay?
Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Jay.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. You touched on Dave's question. He actually asked the question before I could.
I'm good at that.
Yeah, he is. He scooped me on that. I was actually going to ask a question regarding management in Major League Baseball.
Yes.
Do you feel that there are enough African Americans or people of color in high positions in Major League Baseball in this
state?
I think
it's an ongoing struggle, Jay. We've certainly made some strides, and we kind of pass around the three African American managers that have been in baseball since Frank Robinson first came in the 70s. But we still have a lot of work to do, and we see a decrease on all levels of African American participation in the game, and we're working very hard with youth baseball to turn that around. We've got some really great programs. The commissioner has some really great programs and some institutes now in urban areas that do attract African Americans. But it's been a struggle. There's just so many forces fighting for the same attention from kids and from teenagers. And so it's not just baseball that's struggling with it, but all sports and all entertainment have to struggle. So we've seen a decrease down to less than 10% African-American participation in the game in general. So that certainly means we don't have enough managers, we don't have enough African-American players, and we are trying to turn around the picture by working with young people. But it has to extend all the way up and have more African-Americans brought into the game and brought up to the majors, through the minor league ranks and right on up to management, and we need some in ownership. And so it's an ongoing struggle.
Is that a big part of your mandate with Major League Baseball right now?
My personal mandate?
Yeah.
No, it's not. Actually, I do a character education program that's in schools all over the country, and I work with our RBI program, which is one of our very strong urban initiatives, getting African Americans and Hispanics into the game of baseball from the urban areas. We also have baseball academies, and I do a very limited amount of work with the baseball academies, but they're strong and growing in number and also in the number of kids they're serving. So there's, like I said, there's a lot of initiatives for young people that come out of the commissioner's office.
We're wrapping up with Sharon Robinson, and before we let you go, I was wondering if you would mind telling our listeners the story of being at the I Have a Dream speech.
when my father retired from Major League Baseball, I was about 6 years old, and for a while he was, in addition to being with Chock Full of Nuts, he was traveling the country raising money for the NAACP, and also going on marches as the civil rights movement started really heating up, going on marches and going down when there was trouble, being one of the first ones willing to go down and sort of help motivate the community and show that there, you know, we cared what was happening in the South and in across America to change laws that kept African Americans didn't allow African Americans to be full Americans and full participants in our society. But it was always him going out, and my brothers and I and my mother and my grandmother were sort of watching on television and hearing stories when he would come back. And so after, at a certain point, my father said to the family over dinner that he wanted us to all have careers that we loved, but it was also important that we, as a family, continue to work towards social change. And so he and my mother started bringing my brothers and I into their activities with the civil rights movement. And we also started having jazz concerts at our home to raise money. So our first concert came after the March on Washington, and it was for Dr. King and to get the jailed civil rights workers bond money. But our first family activity was to attend the March on Washington. It was a very hot day, and my brother David, my mother and father, and myself went down to Washington to be part of this enormous crowd and this momentous occasion and to hear Dr. King speak. And it was quite thrilling and certainly something I will never forget. But it was also very hot, so I fainted on that day, so I missed part of it.
Did you meet him afterwards?
You know what? I don't remember meeting him afterwards. I remember meeting him when he came to our home shortly afterwards when we had a jazz concert for him. So half of my memories of that day were blurred out by the fact that I was in the health tent.
Oh, goodness. But you did. But you did get to – Martin Luther King was in your home.
Yes, he was in our home.
That's pretty
very amazing day, and it was special because we each had a role. I mean, my brothers and I had a role as well as my parents. So we really, when they handed over the money to Dr. King, you know, we felt like we had helped to raise that money as well, and it brought us into a lifelong investment in social change in America.
We want to thank you for making that investment, Sharon. It's
yes.
It's such a pleasure to speak with you.
I just have to tell you one more thing. We talked about my father being dying 40 years ago, but it's also an anniversary, almost an anniversary for the Jackie Robinson Foundation, which my mother started shortly after my dad died. And we now have, you know, about 250 scholars, Jackie Robinson scholars all over the country, and they we're bringing them into New York very soon for our leadership weekend, and they spend 4 or 5 days with us in New York, and they have everything from mentoring to going to plays and cultural activities and museums. And then on Monday night, we have our annual black tie dinner where they take their networking to the next level. So it's a program that's very successful, and our biggest success is that 97% of our students graduate from college.
That's amazing. Wow, what a number. That's
it's a great number and a real testament to my mother. You know, it's the Jackie Robinson Foundation, but my mother, it could be the Rachel Robinson Foundation because it is something that she started and has stayed with. And she's turning 90 this year, but she still goes in the office 2 days a week and is on a daily basis involved in the foundation.
The letter that you read on your mother's behalf last year on DeGaspe Street was, I think it took all our breaths away on that snowy day. And we want to thank you so much for everything that you do for social change and for justice. And really, thank you for your time today. This was such an honor to speak with you.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Robinson hit that ball. It went zooming across the left field wall. Yeah, boy.
Yes, yes, Jackie hit that ball.
And when he swung his bat, the crowd went wild because he knocked that ball a solid mile.
Welcome back to the Kauffman Show.
Yes,
we are
Jackie
now joined by one of our favorite Montreal Expos of all time, Without any further ado, let's just bring him in. Hello to Lino DeShields. Good evening. How are you?
How you doing?
We're very good. We've had the opportunity tonight to speak with Sharon Robinson, and I'd love to get your thoughts on what Jackie Robinson means to you.
Well, I mean, of course, he meant a great deal. I mean, you know, his legacy and just him being the pioneer that he was, you know, it meant a lot. I can't speak for everybody, but to me in particular, you know, it meant a lot.
Was it the kind of thing that you embraced even more, knowing the history of Robinson and Montreal and having come up through the Montreal system?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, for those reasons, like you just said, I mean, it kind of felt like I was walking in his steps a little bit, especially playing in Montreal and then getting to play, you know, for the Dodgers and play at Dodger Stadium. And, you know, it just kind of felt like I was walking in his steps a bit, you know, and like I said, you know, it just means a great deal to me.
How have you tried to continue to carry Jackie's legacy forward?
Well, I mean, you know, once upon a time, you know, when I played, you know, I tried to do it in my own way. You know, I did it, you know, by pulling my socks up back in 1991, you know, way before, you know, it was a fashion statement or you know, whatever it is, a trend or anything, you know, I was doing it from my heart back then. You know, just trying to get guys to be aware, not only of Jackie, but just of the whole Negro League legacy. A lot of guys who paved the way for us. It wasn't just Jackie. You know, Jackie gets a lot of the credit, of course, but there was a lot of guys who sacrificed so that African-Americans could play this game that we love.
Delino, Sharon Robinson expressed some disappointment in the lack of or the decrease in African-Americans in the major leagues right now. She said there's a 10% decrease also in leadership roles. What are your feelings on that?
Well, I agree with Sharon. I think that Jackie, you know, would be disappointed right now if he were here with us today. You know, I don't know. Like I said, I can't speak for him, but I doubt that this is what he envisioned. You know, when he was going through all this. And, you know, the numbers have decreased a lot over the years, you know, and we all have our reasons and all for that, you know. I mean, we can go on and on. That's probably a whole nother show. But, you know, I have to agree with Sharon on that point. I think Jackie would be really disappointed if he were here today with the way things are right now.
I'd like to pick up on that, actually, for a couple of minutes, if you don't mind, Delino. I guess it's a bit of a counterbalance because one of the things that we did get to talk about with Mrs. Robinson today was politics and, of course, how Jackie would feel seeing an African-American in the White House. Now, do you think that there's an issue, that the issue of race is pretty much at the same level that it was?
Yeah, I think it's probably worse right now, actually. You know, even though we have Barack Obama in the White House and, you know, that's a great accomplishment as well, but I mean, overall, you know, for the African-American community, I think things are pretty bleak right now. You know what I mean? It's not looking good. And, you know, like I said, I'm going to keep it on the baseball subject. You know what I mean? I'm not going to get into the politics of it. But, you know, for me, it's like baseball mirrors corporate America to me. You know what I mean? You know, Americans, the big thing with the election this year is where are the jobs? You know what I mean? It's all about the jobs. Mm-hmm. Where are the jobs? Where are the jobs? Jobs are overseas. You know what I mean? Everything is made in China or it's made in India or made somewhere else besides the United States. And I think baseball is a mirror image of corporate America. I mean, they basically, you know, taking a large amount of their, you know, jobs and taking them overseas. You know what I mean? And that's made a lot of players, not just African-American players, but it's made a lot of players expendable.
Yeah, well, I guess the competition is more fierce. You see a lot of players from all over the world that we didn't even see 20 years ago when you were playing.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's true. But, I mean, you know, they're spending millions of dollars, you know, in these countries developing players as well. You know what I mean? That money's not being spent to develop, you know, kids in urban America or in the inner cities of America. You know what I mean? And as far as I talk about the college situation a lot as well, you know, what's going on with college baseball? You know, there are no full rides for baseball players. I mean, I think that the landscape of college sports would look a lot different if there were no full rides for basketball and football. I doubt we would know who Michael Jordan was, or, you know, Emmitt Smith or Deion Sanders, or, you know, a lot of guys that were able to go to college on full rides, you know, who come from, you know, I'm not saying that they were poor, but, you know, I doubt that their families could afford to come up with, you know, 80 or 90% of a college tuition to send them to school. So I just think that that has a lot to do with it as well.
That's an absolutely fascinating point, Delano. I had not looked at it, especially, I mean, the thought of not knowing who Michael Jordan is kind of mind-boggling.
Well, I mean, like I said, if Michael Jordan wasn't, you know, couldn't go to school on a full scholarship to North Carolina, you know, I doubt we would know who he is today. I mean, I just think that you know, that's one of the big things, in my opinion, that is contributing to that decrease in numbers.
Now, you have is it called the Urban Baseball Initiative, the organization that you started?
Well, we actually, at one time, we were trying to start a league. It's called the Urban Baseball League.
And is that still something that's in the works?
Well, it's still something that's very dear to my heart, you know, because I look, you know, it seems like every nationality has a league of their own. I mean, you know, you go to Puerto Rico, and they have the Puerto Rican League. You know, the Dominican League, the Mexican League, you know, and I think that everybody has a place to call their own, except for, you know, African American, which we did have at one time, you know, and that's, you know, like I said, that's one of the things I have mixed emotions about, the whole thing. Like I said, I love Jackie's legacy, but at the same time, I think as a community, we lost a lot, you know, when these players came into the league, because at that time, you know, the Negro League fell apart. And a lot of guys that love the game and you know, just love the game of baseball and maybe not, probably couldn't have played in the major leagues, but still would have had an opportunity to play the game that they love. And I think we lost that in the process.
How long till you're managing the big leagues, Delano?
I don't know. You know, it's hard to say. You know, you got to pay your dues down here in the minor league, so. Well, hopefully one day I'll get an opportunity. I know that I'm capable. I know the game. So it's just about right now, it's just about proving myself down here in the minor leagues and waiting for that opportunity.
When you do, Delino, I think the Jackie Robinson will be very proud.
I appreciate it.
Delino, have a great night, and we miss you up here in Montreal.
Okay, well, I miss Montreal, too. And I want to send a shout-out to my man, Norman Marshall up there. Yeah, he's still doing his thing up there north of the border.
Awesome. Norman's a good friend of the show, and we will definitely pass that along and make sure that he hears it. Thank you, Delino.
Okay.
Did you hear the news about what's happening in Brooklyn? We really got the blues about what's happening in Brooklyn. It ain't official yet. We hope official it don't get. But beware, my friend, and let me warn you. They're thinking of taking the bums to California. Let's keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn. Our house is not a home without some love. Don't let them leave our premises. L.A. will be their nemesis. But Brooklyn fits the Dodgers like a glove.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Hour number two. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. And
I want the Dodgers in Brooklyn.
We all want the Dodgers in Brooklyn.
Of course we do.
We all want to go back to Ebbets Field and watch Duke Snider hit bombs.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we can dream. And our next guest has some very cool news for us. He's a city councilor in the borough of Côte Saint-Luc. You can read him in the Suburban every week, and you can find him online at mikecohen.ca. Good evening, Mike. Welcome to the program.
Hey, pleasure to be with you guys.
And a pleasure to finally make your acquaintance. We've never spoken before.
No. We've emailed and we've Facebooked plenty, but we're going to meet soon. We're going to meet on March 18th, I hope.
Perfect. Give everybody the scoop, Mike.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm got Gary Carter fever like anyone else. And in fact, you can catch me on mikecohen.ca, and you can also catch me at thesuburban.com if you go into the blog section. And I did do a blog on Mike. Everyone has a personal, memory of Gary Carter. I covered the Expos for many years for the now defunct Sunday Express newspaper and for the wire service. Got to know him personally on a first name basis and was crushed like everyone else when he passed away. Crushed when I saw that sad picture of him on his last days when he went to the university. When he passed away, I started thinking of, what can we do? Wearing my city councilor's hat, I can tell you that Côte Saint-Luc will be doing something for him. But just like Montreal, we're going to give it some time. We're going to be doing our consultations, but we'll be doing something for him for certain in the next few months. But I also help run the Sports Celebrity Breakfast, where Jay's brother last year was the star, Anakin Flade. And you'll recall that last year we did a big tribute to the Montreal Expos. You were there, correct, Dave?
Yeah, it was wonderful. It was so good to see all Wetland and Rojas and Pedro and Felipe. It was
a spectacular. Spectacular experience.
And your dad, if I remember correctly.
That's right. Larry Fredericks, real name Lawrence Frederick Cohen. And, he covered the Expos from day one, and he was very excited. He got up there with Anakin Flade, and he let everyone and take me out to the ball game. But it was a great experience. And one of the things I was thinking during the year as we're putting together our breakfast, it's taking place on Sunday, March 18th at the Cummings Jewish Center for Seniors. And 600 people were pretty much basically sold out. We just have VIP tickets. We will have some exceptional surprise guests who we're not getting the details with now. We do have some former Canadians, former Alouettes, present-day Alouettes. But I really felt that we should continue the tradition of having an Expo guest every year. And then when Gary Carter passed away, the organizers got together last week, and Cookie Lazarus, one of our honorary chair, who was at one time the agent of this particular gent, made a phone call to Florida. And a man who's no stranger to TSN 990, Warren Cromartie, will be flying in for the event. And we'll be having Warren Cromartie as our special guest. And he will be leading a tribute to Gary Carter. We're hoping that Anakin Slade's schedule will allow him to be there. And he has told me he's going to try to be there. And he would we'll show his video and get people into the mood of Gary Carter. And some others who knew Gary will speak as well. So we're going to make sure that we have our tribute to Gary Carter at the breakfast. And I'm sure everyone there will appreciate it.
Okay, so Mike, if anybody wants to get their hands on these limited amount of VIP tickets, how would they go about doing that?
They can call 342-1234 and ask for Susan. The VIP tickets, of course, are not the small ticket prices. They're a little bit more expensive, but it gets you into the VIP room where you get in there a half hour before the event starts, 45 minutes, and you actually get to mingle with the head table celebrities. So it is a pretty good experience. And Dave, we'll have a press box seat for you for sure. So contact me offline because we can't have a baseball fan like yourself not there.
Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate that.
All right. So you'll be in touch with me offline.
I will. I will get in touch in the next week. And when the city of Côte Saint-Luc is ready to make an announcement as to what they're going to be doing to honor Gary Carter, I hope you'll share it on our program.
We'll make sure, Dave, you'll be the first person I tell.
Fantastic.
All right.
We're pulling some rank in this town, Jay.
I'll make sure my brother makes the time. Don't worry, he listens to me.
All right, Jay. Everyone will raise a toast at your bar for it, okay? How about that?
I'm all for that. Don't worry.
You can call 342-1234. There are several VIP tickets left that allows you to get into the event 45 minutes early and hobnob with Crow and the other celebrities that will be there.
Exactly, and we'll have some really exceptional surprise guests coming down, and we're hoping to know in the next week or two. But some of them we're going to keep as is. You know, when you're already sold out, you're already sold out. So no, you don't need to pump these names up now. We're already sold out. So we want people to be sitting there in their seats and go, "Wow, look who's here! I can't believe it."
Oh boy!
Only the intros, and my dad will be helping with the introductions this year, so it should be lots of fun.
Mike Cohen, thank you so much for your time. MikeCohen.ca, thesuburban.com, and
take care.
Doing a yeoman's job in Côte Saint-Luc. Thank you,
good
sir.
Good to talk to you, Dave.
Have a great night.
Take care, Mike. Thank you.
Bye bye.
The tributes are starting.
They're starting,
and I had a wonderful time at that breakfast last year. I got to go with my dad and my dad's friend Maury, who got us a table, and it was fantastic.
I couldn't make it out there. But,
well, yeah, I was with you 4 hours earlier at the bar.
Right,
it was
exactly.
It was a very tired morning.
I couldn't tell you what the sky looks like in the morning. Word morning is not in my vocabulary, but I did manage to meet a lot of the guys because they did come by afterwards.
Let's go to the phones. 514-790-0990. If you're out of town, 1-866-896-2546. And we are joined by our friend Conrad. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. How are you?
We're great. How are you?
Not too bad. I had I was thinking, and I had a sudden thought, which might be very apropos. Jerry Park. Why don't they change it to Gary Park?
Conrad, I don't know if you're a drinking man, but right now I'm tempted to give you the $50 gift certificate to Brutopia.
And going a step further, in addition to that, I know this is going to cost a bit of money, but they can do one of two things, or both. They can put up their space there for a baseball park. And number two, what would be great for Montreal, if there was a museum of Montreal baseball.
That would be wonderful. The McCord Museum, Conrad, had an exhibit, about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Called Baseball in Montreal.
But if this is a permanent exhibit.
I agree.
It would be something that, and let the world know that Montreal still is interested in baseball.
I like the idea of building a field. I like the idea of building 8 fields.
Yes, of course.
To honor Gary Carter in 8 different municipalities across this city. Obviously, that requires more money than I have, but I think it's a great idea. And, you know, I keep going back to this thought that it's not going to be our generation that brings baseball back. It's going to be the next one.
That's right. But they don't know about baseball.
And they're not going to know about it if they don't grow up playing it.
And they also won't know about the history of baseball in Montreal.
No, they won't. And the history of baseball is something that, in this town especially, is something I hold very dear to my heart, Conrad. I actually spent a lot of time this weekend researching Atwater Park.
Oh, yes, I remember. I used to go there.
You did not.
Sure. I'm 86, so...
Wow. Conrad.
Yeah.
So that's... Atwater Park, as far as I was able to tell, is where Westmount Square is now.
No, it was... It's where the...
Or Dawson College?
No.
Well, it's where the market is.
But also where the... what's the name of the building there?
Alexis Neon.
Alexis Neon.
Oh, okay.
Right in that area.
Babe Ruth played there.
Yeah, I know. I did that I did.
That you didn't see.
But I did see him.
What did you? Where?
Yeah, at the time, I was living in Windsor, which is right next to Detroit.
Sure.
And I saw a game with the Yankees and the Tigers. The first game I ever saw, my father took me.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Conrad, wow.
Yeah.
Will you, you seem like a night owl. Will you join us in studio one night and regale us with old-timey baseball stories?
Certainly, be my pleasure.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Can you give Jimmy your phone number off air?
And, yeah, certainly.
We'll get in touch this week.
Okay.
Conrad, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
Stay on the line. Good idea, huh?
We're really reducing our 6 degree of separation from great figures of the 20th century tonight.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's eat your heart out, Kevin Bacon. Yeah, I said it.
I have a good off-air story that I can tell people when I see them downtown about my 1 degree of separation with John Lennon.
Okay.
It involves Mickey Dolenz and Brutopia.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good story, and we'll have to save it for the podcast.
Okay.
This is the Kaufman Show, and hope you all have enjoyed what we've done so far.
Yeah, Sharon Robinson and Delano DeShields.
And Marquise.
Yeah, and that was great stuff. Great stuff. Very interesting. A fresh perspective, especially from Delano, who is a little bit militant on the subject, which I agree with him, by the way.
Delano has always been a man of convictions.
Never held back. He's never held back.
Storm and Norman, I hope that we did the job that you expected tonight, and I look forward to you calling in hopefully soon and you can give us a little performance review.
I'm nervous now.
I was nervous when he sent out that tweet earlier, man.
Yeah.
I understand that this is a major subject, and we try not to shy away from the major subjects. It's something that's important to me. I look at sports as a vehicle for social change.
Well, we can do that, or we can talk about Andrei Kostitsyn for 3 hours.
Do you want to?
No.
Okay. You sure?
Maybe for 2 minutes later on.
I think we already addressed the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, if anybody wants to call in and talk about
that. Absolutely. We're always willing to talk about the Habs.
Let's go back to the phones. It's our friend John in Denver, Colorado. Good evening, sir.
Gentlemen, how are you?
We're fantastic. How you doing?
Good. I loved hearing Grissom.
Yeah, he's great.
I used to play him in that Sega World Series baseball game as a kid. I was always the Braves, and he always jacked it every time I had him at the plate. I hit like 900 home runs with him.
Wow. Broke Hank Aaron's record, did you, with Marquise Grissom?
In one season.
Wow, with the same team, too. That's incredible.
Yeah.
What did you think of Delino, John?
Honestly, I was making a quick sandwich. I feel bad.
Well,
I loved
okay.
Delino when he was with the Cards, though.
It'll be up on the podcast when you...
I will absolutely listen to it because I always break down my own phone calls. I always got to get better. It's like game film. You got to get better.
And as far as you're concerned, how are you doing?
Oh, we are well out in Denver. Suddenly, it's no longer like alive out here. It's like the Mighty Ducks. Quack, quack, quack. We're going to go all the way.
Oh, really?
No, we're not.
Did they hold on tonight?
Yeah, they won 4-1.
Oh, man.
A beating.
Ah. I want Anaheim.
No, you don't. You like me, don't you?
I like you. Hey, I like you just fine. Nothing to do with you. It's not personal.
Yeah, that's
nothing's
fair.
Nothing's personal. Come on.
That's 4
oh,
in a
there's
row.
Some things. Yeah, I still want Sacco out of here no matter what, and I will give him to you for, I don't know, that hockey stick you guys are giving away.
You know what? Next time, our good friends at Sherwood offer us a stick to give away, we'll
trade it for Joe Sacco.
We'll take that into consideration. Having Joe Sacco in studio with us, Jay, every Monday would be would add some insight to our show.
Oh, and I would absolutely call in and give him some insight.
John, thank you for the call, man.
All right, I just had one last thing.
Yeah.
About Kostitsyn, are you all sad to see one of the Godfathers go?
No.
Yeah, I know. That was kind of not topical anymore.
Well, that's okay.
It was that old mafia joke.
Yes. I understood what you were saying. But,
okay,
but really, I, you know, the days where, at least for me, the days where I had an attachment to a player on a team, that went away with Saku Koivu.
Yeah.
I don't have that feeling about, I mean, there's guys, I love P.K. Subban. I love Carey Price.
You got are either of those two guys available at the draft? You guys want to send them over here?
Yeah. You know,
yeah, for Joe Sacco.
We're just going to keep sending you our
John.
John, we're just going to keep sending you our best goaltenders. Okay, consider it a pipeline.
That'll work. Hey, it's a model that works.
Have a good night, John.
You guys have you as well.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
514-790-0990 1-866-896-2546. This is the Kaufman Show, and it's our friend Roy and Dorval. Good evening.
Hey, Dave. How are you, buddy?
I'm great. How you doing?
Not too bad. Real fast, I didn't call you about the Habs, but I got a funny feeling the Kostitsyn brothers are going to make a name for themselves now that they're back together again. I really do.
Yeah, that happens, you know.
Yeah.
You deal John LeClair and he goes and plays with Eric Lindros, and you...
Dave, I wanted to say, you were asking, you know, sorry about my throat, but...
Yeah, you're sounding a little rough, man.
Yeah, I am. You're thinking about something for Gary Carter, you know. The biggest thing that I could think of would be opening day downtown with our stadium where Gary's watching over us and build it and they will come and having opening day honor Gary Carter. That would be my wish, you know. It's a dream that I always have, but I wish it would happen.
Roy, let's give it 20 years. And...
Yeah, I know. I'm hoping I'll still be around, but really down to earth. And I was thinking about having like an establishment, in honor of Gary, having a foundation. We call it like Gary's Kids Carter, you know, for the kids with cancer or something like that, you know.
There's a million different ideas that can be bandied about.
Yeah.
And, Roy, obviously, you call back anytime. We appreciate hearing from you. I think that I liked what Mike Cohen was saying earlier, Jay. I liked the idea of taking our time and not rushing to a decision.
Yeah, I mean, there's no rush. I mean, we've been how long now without a team? 8 years?
No, but it's not just about the team. It's, you know...
Well, it's something you want to take your time on. It's
Dorchester Boulevard was not renamed René Lévesque Boulevard overnight.
No, it took
and
years.
And Robert Bourassa has been gone a long time, and only now are they talking about the proper way to commemorate him. something like this is not a rush decision. The thing that scares me about naming a street after Gary Carter are the conditions of streets in this town and the idea that you'd end up calling it Carter. So it'd be, these damn potholes on Carter are killing me. Or I'm stuck in bloody traffic on Carter again. That's not apropos.
No, and there's...
You know, they're talking about building all these, all sorts of new bridges right now. And the idea of having a Gary Carter Bridge, better make damn sure you build it right.
There's a lot of resistance. Yeah, no kidding. There's a lot of resistance to renaming streets, as you can see. There's a lot of red tape, and people don't like it. People don't like that kind of change, you know? Especially, it's a little more personal when it's the street you're living on.
Oh, this is too awesome.
Uh-oh.
On Twitter, Mitch to Rod, Hunter Z. Thompson to In Rod We Trust 990. Make any newsworthy phone calls during the last election? RoboCon.
Oh.
We're going to keep this top of mind. If you guys don't know what RoboCon is, check it out. Canada, to all of our American listeners, deal with this for a second. Canada is known as a bastion of democracy. Peacekeepers renowned for the last 60 years. When there's an election in a foreign country and people are concerned about whether the election is going to be democratic or not, Canada sends observers. It's something we do. I'm pretty sure the Paul Martin went to observe the elections in Ukraine. The conservative government, and you can read the story, it's two guys from the Ottawa Citizen have broken it, and they are the modern-day Woodward and Bernstein. Stephen Marr is one of them, and I can't remember the other guy's name. Mick something. But they are doing a wonderful job right now of exposing something that's really terrifying. People were calling on behalf, pretending that they were Elections Canada, and telling people that their voting stations had changed. And this happened in over 30 ridings across the country last May's election. Maybe things should have turned out a little bit differently. All of you on Twitter, you want to go and complain about scoops and stories and rumor and innuendo? Get on this one. Because this one's not BS.
Somebody has resigned over it.
Yeah, 23-year-old kid.
Yeah, well, somebody's got to take the fall, right?
He's the patsy.
Yeah.
This goes way higher. Conservatives are fantastic politicians. They do a great job of getting elected. And 2015 seems so far away, Jay.
Couldn't be far enough, to be honest with you, Dave.
Well, that's when the next election is.
Yeah, it is.
And I know people are tired of elections here. But at what point? Stealing an election. Not saying that the Conservatives wouldn't still have a majority. That seems entirely plausible. But this is Canada, and I expect more. I really do. Let's go back to the phones. 514-790-0990. Thank you for letting me rant. We'll continue that later. Let's go to George in St. Lazar, out in God's country. Good evening, George.
Hey, Dave. How's it going?
Good, good. I just ruffled my own feathers for a second.
I somehow wish that St. Lazar was a long-distance phone call so I could call that one. It went that toll-free number so that I could, you know, charge it to the TSN radio station.
Well, just drive half an hour across the border into Ontario and make the call.
All righty. Got a couple of things I want to talk about. First of all, thanks so much for that great first half of the show that you had. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Really hit home. And again, you've done you and Jay have done an outstanding job and, keep on doing what you're doing. And it's amazing how Twitter, you know, is an amazing place because while we were talking about the fact that while I was listening on the air and hearing you talk about Randy Thiemann, that Marquise Grissom was one of his favorite expos and wanted to say hello, I tweeted something about that. And Randy responded and said that, told me that the reason why Marquise was his favorite player was because when he was battling through cancer, he actually unexpectedly called him and just to see how he was doing, which really touched home with me. That was like an amazing story.
Yeah, the tweet from Randy says, it's to you and to me, and it says, battling cancer, phone rings, and it's Grissom wanting to know how I was doing. One of the best.
Exactly.
So, Randy, if you're driving home right now, we said hello, and he
you
said
hi
back.
Said hello.
George, we said hello.
You did. You got it in there. I was thinking about how can we possibly pay tribute to Gary Carter?
Yeah.
Okay, that's something that's been everybody's mind, especially since we heard the announcement that the city wanted to do something special for this great ball player, and they're willing to form a committee, which I said I nominate David Kauffman to be on that committee because Dave Kauffman equals Expos forever, especially if you see a guy walking with a cardigan on a on a Saturday night downtown. You know how much the Expos meant to you.
That warms my heart, George. Thank you.
So I was thinking about it, and I said, you know what? It's gonna be kind of hard to pay tribute to the man because, you know, if you're at Olympic Stadium, what can you really do at Olympic Stadium? And changing Jarry Park to Gary Park, it's not going to work because they changed Jarry Park to Pope John Paul Park, and then they changed it back to Jarry Park. So we want something that's a little bit everlasting. And no doubt about it, you know, having an Expo Museum is a great idea. I've always said that the Expos, ever since they left, like there's no evidence that there was even a baseball team here as far as the city of Montreal was concerned. So I was thinking and I was saying to myself, why not have a montage of the Expos at Pierre Elliott Trudeau Airport? So that people going away on trips and people coming into Montreal have some kind of an Expo montage so that there's evidence of an Expo team that used to be in Montreal. And somehow in the back of my mind, I said to myself, how nice would it be if in that montage there was also a picture of Gary Carter smiling with that beautiful big smile that he had and with a little caption underneath it that would say, Bienvenue au Montréal.
That are not going to have a team anymore. But my heart and my ring is with them too.
George, I love it. Love it, George. I think that's a great idea.
By the way,
yeah.
While the Oscars were going on last night,
yep.
There was a tirade on Twitter between Jay and Lisa. Oscar discussion on Twitter between Jay and Lisa. I loved it.
Those are what my dates look like nowadays. It's just, it's all virtual.
Guys, keep up the great work. And as always, is it Monday yet? I'll be tuned into the Kauffman Show.
George, thank you so much. We appreciate it. This is the Kauffman Show. Speaking with, we've got Wes Marskell from the Darcys up next. They're in town on Friday night. We've got a pair of tickets. It's going to be fun. Jimmy's going to tell you about all the awesome trades that happened today in hashtag Trade Center. Let's go out on your bro. This is the Kauffman Show. And this one's for Space Man, growing Vlad. And most of all, this one's for us. The fans are stuck with the team when the times are tough. Singing. Those were the days and the memories. Dale White and Lou Frazier, Odie Nixon, F.B., Eli, and Laser. I remember the magic El Perfecto, 27 men up and down like Presto. I remember sun coming down on the field, no roof. I remember doing a jig on the dugout with youths. I remember just how close we came, 81 in the strike year, still feel. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. This is a song called Don't Bleed Me by the Darcys. By far, the coolest music video that I have seen in years.
I'm watching it right now.
It's crazy.
Sick.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. It's apocalyptic, if you will. And our next guest is the drummer in the Darcys. I was very fortunate to see them in concert, about 6 weeks ago at Petit Campus. And they're back on Friday at Cabaret de Mile End. They're opening for the Bombay Bicycle Club. I'm more excited about seeing my friend Wes and the Darcys. Good evening, Wes. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? I just actually played that song, walked off stage, and called you from the venue.
Well, that's kind of cool.
That's
huh?
the coolest thing I've ever heard.
It's funny because they're like, just promise you'll use a calling card. It's a lot of money to call Canada. I was like, yeah, totally. And then your 1-866 number wouldn't work on my calling card, so I just called.
Oh, no.
They're going to be mad later.
Oh, well, as long as you send them the bill. If you want, you can hang up. We'll call you right back.
No. It's not billing me. It's billing the venue, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, okay. Well,
we're good.
We don't care about them. You're in Chicago tonight, right?
I am. Yeah. We just walked off, actually. So.
Now, you have driven across this fair continent since I saw you last.
When we play Montreal, I guess in a couple of days, I literally have done a loop around North America, and we'll be back in Montreal, so it's kind of crazy to think that we'll be back there in a few days.
And then you re-loop again. I know you have a big showcase at South by Southwest, which you must be so excited for.
I'm really excited, but they're unannounced yet, but we also have 9 other shows at South by Southwest.
Whoa!
8 other shows, so it's going to be a little bit draining. Our manager called me today and said, just, you know, before you get to South by, just take a day off, sleep, you know, get some rest, and gear up. So
well, that's what they do to the bands that they expect to blow up in the next year. So get that rest now, because I have a feeling you're going to be very busy over the next 12 months, Wes.
Yeah, we're off to the UK and Europe right after. I think we have a couple of weeks in Toronto, and then we're back off. So.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm losing it a bit, but they've locked me in a cellar in the basement of some club in Chicago so I can make a phone call, so I think I'm okay.
That sounds very... very old school and cool, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, it's actually cool because they gave me a key and they like locked the door. No one could come in here, and I didn't understand why. And then I walked into the room where the phone was, and there's like a stack of money beside me, and then on the other side is all the beer for the whole venue. So I'm just gonna pocket some of each and go to town. And
nobody will ask any questions.
That's
don't
right.
worry.
Somebody was like, "Go to the absinthe bar," and now I can buy everyone drinks because there's all this money beside me.
All right, so all our listeners in Chicago, you got to find Wes and find the party.
Exactly.
Describe your music for us, because I have a lot of trouble putting a name on it. I've heard some different terms online that I don't really understand, and
it's tough. You know, like it's one of those things that you're so close to, you have a hard time. I'm verbalizing for other people. We get a lot of art rock, sort of the genre that we're in, or people sort of lump us into. Other people call us a Radiohead ripoff band.
See, I didn't hear that. If anything, I thought of like the experimental side of Wilco.
Yeah, exactly. Well, which is fitting because we're in Chicago.
That's right.
They're like, apparently Jeff Tweedy's kid played here, I don't know, a couple of days ago, and they're 16, and they've been playing together for 8 years.
Oh my God.
Which is nuts, right? So. Wow. But yeah, I think in a way we're a little bit heavier than that. I think we have sort of like a little bit more of a can rock sort of Constantine's maybe vibe than Wilco. But yeah, I don't know. Like we get a lot of noise rock, art rock, that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, I think we're a rock and roll band. You know, when we go with other bands, we just try to be louder than them on stage. It's really our only goal.
We're talking to Wes Marskell from the Darcys. They're in town on Friday night at Cabaret de Mile End, and I will be there. So come hang out and see some great music on Friday night. Wes, I want to ask you about Steely Dan.
Oh, yeah. Please do. They're my favorite band.
Okay, so that's where the inspiration came from to do an entire Steely Dan cover album?
In a sense. I think that they're also my dad's favorite band for a very different reason. I think he sort of grew up sort of at their height, and he liked them for a different reason than I did. And so part of it was showing respect to that record, and then part of it was just sort of destroying the record, building it up in my own light as if, you know, I was to hear it now. And I think that was sort of the cool part about that record, is that people hear it, a lot of the younger people that have no idea who Steely Dan is, they come to the show. And a lot of these Bombay shows are all ages shows, and you'll see the dads will bring their kids, and the kids will be like, "This song's cool," and the dad's like, "This is a Steely Dan song." And they're like, "Who's Steely Dan?" So, and then, you know, you have the dads that or people that know the record that hear it, and they sort of have like a legend to the record. They can hear, they know the record before they've ever heard it, and then there's these other people that just think it's the new Darcy's record. So,
have you heard from, or have Donald Fagen or Walter Becker heard it?
I think they've heard it. I haven't heard anything from them. I'm sort of anticipating our New York shows to have these two crabby old dudes booing us from the back corner. But we haven't heard anything official from them. But there's been so many people that have passed it along to them that I can't believe they haven't, at least. I mean, but then again, why would they listen? Who knows, right? So.
Well, I would imagine that they would be quite honored and really curious to see what the interpretation would be.
It's sort of an idiotic idea. I remember as I've done tonight, I think I was a little deep in the rider at a show, and somebody said, "What's your band doing, man? Like, why haven't you put it on a record?" And I was like, and I looked down, I happened to have a Steely Dan t-shirt on, and my answer was, "We're going to cover a whole Steely Dan record," which was a total lie at the time. And then on the Monday after the show, the guy wrote our manager an email being like, "Hey, like, I'm from Sony. Really excited to hear the Darcy's interpretation of Asia." So then we were like, "Oh shit, we gotta actually project." And then I had to tell the band, and they're like, "You know what? Screw you. Like, this is not okay. You can't just do that." And then we learned how difficult the record actually was going to be. So definitely, I think it took some years off my life recording our interpretation of Asia. But I'm glad we did it, man.
Is it the kind of thing that you would consider doing another cover album?
No, I don't think so. I think if I was going to cover a record, I would cover Asia again. I think I'd figure out a way to do it differently. But covering a record, you run out of ideas so quickly because it's sort of a lot of output for one idea. And Asia is a little bit tricky in that sense because there's so many, like, there's more chords probably in the first song on Asia than there is in most successful rock records that come out of Canada on the whole record, right? Like, it's just memorizing how many chords follow each other. Like, it's such a dense musical record. So I know, like, it would be a little bit easier for covering like an Oasis record. we'd be laughing. But remember that summer ahead, we're in our hands, and we're just kind of like, how the hell are we going to finish this? But,
well,
I think I would do it again because I know it, and I think that there's things I would do differently. But I don't think I ever want to cover another record. I know for a fact because I've been told that our label will not put up another cover.
Well, it's a very rewarding listen, Wes. It's I'm not a Steely Dan fan, so my first real flirting with Asia, if you will, is from listening to your album.
Yeah, well, I think that's helpful in a lot of ways because people that know it, they come at it a different way, and then people that don't know it, then they go back to the Asian, they see what we're doing, and so the original Asian, they see what we're doing with the record instead of going, you bastardized the greatest studio record of all time, which we sort of get hate mail from like 60-year-old men that think we've done the worst thing in the world. I'm glad that some people can look at it sort of objectively or go from one point backwards instead of, you know, just coming from thinking that this is like the record of all time.
The Darcy's are opening for Bombay Bicycle Club at Cabaret to Mile End on Friday night. Get your tickets and get there early so you can see the Darcy's. Any idea what time you'll be hitting the stage?
We'll probably be on at 9. I think you have a pair of tickets to give away. Is that a thing?
We do, yes.
I think that's it. I think it's sold out.
Oh, so really?
Those tickets are the tickets.
Oh, look at that.
Everything's sold out for the whole tour. We've been really lucky.
You gonna get me in too, Wes?
Yeah, I'll get you.
All right, cool. Jeez, all these sold-out shows. The last time you were here, it was a sold-out show, too.
I know. I don't know. We're just, we're piggybacking on these good bands, I think.
Please, don't sell yourself short, sir.
Might be popular in Montreal because you destroyed Toronto on that video. So.
Yeah, right? Well,
was that the HMS Montreal or what?
Exactly. Well, it's funny because it's really hard for Canadian, so Toronto bands to do well in Montreal, and we've got The Mirror and things like that have done some really nice pieces on the record, so we're really happy that, you know, we're able to tour there and people know and like our band, because I know a lot of bands suffer from that. So.
Well, we know you now, and we like you too. And
Thank you.
We will keep playing your music and promoting the hell out of you guys. And when you explode this year like it's going to happen at South by Southwest in a month, please remember us when, Wes.
I promise.
Awesome. I'll see you Friday night.
Yeah, all right. It'll be great to see you.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
That's Wes Marskell from the Darcy's. Third caller through gets two tickets to the Darcy's and Bombay Bicycle Club tomorrow night. Sorry, Friday night.
Friday night.
Friday night.
Make sure.
March the 2nd.
So we have a commodity. We have a treasure here in studio. We seem to have the last two tickets.
That's pretty exciting, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Jimmy, we'll take a break and get to the calls, and we'll get those tickets. Thank you to Wes Marskell from the Darcys. This is The Kaufman Show. And this song is called Home at Last. The Darcys.
I know this super highway, this right familiar song. I guess that I'm the lucky one. Who wrote that tired sea song? Set on this peaceful shore. You think you've heard this one before?
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Those are the Gourds, Gin and Juice, with my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
That cut off rather suddenly for some reason.
It did. It did. There was a bit of an oopsie word in there that we had to.
An oopsie word.
That's I don't know what else to call it right now.
An oopsie word.
Not quite at the a little bit more than the what Wes from the Darcy.
Wes's oopsie word.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Congratulations to Sam Winter. Seemed very excited to win those tickets. And Sam, I'll see you at the show on Friday night.
That sounds like a good rock and roll name, doesn't it?
Sam Winter? Winter? Yeah, I have
Sam a feeling Sam Winter in the trees.
I have a feeling it's a nom de plume.
Okay.
But that's okay. It'll still get him in at the door.
Okay.
I imagine he'll have some sort of ID to prove that he's Sam Winter. No, don't worry, Sam. You're well taken care of.
That's a street name, Sam Winter.
It's like Anakin Slade.
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense.
So this has been an interesting show. As always, we're all over the place.
We are all over the place, but, you know, we're talking.
Nah, we like to talk.
We're talking.
We're good at talking. I got to talk to you at some point about this show that I'm going to next Saturday night. I'm going to have another big rock and roll weekend.
You should go to more shows, Dave. You don't go to enough shows, I find.
I don't.
No, you don't?
Jay, if I could.
I was being facetious.
I know you were, but yeah. I'd go six nights a week if I could.
I know you would.
I love live music.
I can see that.
Makes me happy, man.
Cool.
It's a wonderful distraction from the trading deadline. You know, and can we rant about Twitter for a few minutes? We've got a few minutes here.
Yeah, we started to talk about this.
The great equalizer.
The great equalizer. You go ahead. Go ahead. Start.
Yeah, I mean, we both have things to say, and there are so many wonderful things about Twitter, and there are so many ridiculous things about Twitter, and we have seen the best of Twitter and the worst of Twitter in the last 2 weeks. The best being when Gary Carter passed away.
Yep. Yep.
The humanity on that was it was heartwarming. It was wonderful to see everybody reach out through social media. Problem with it is that we also see the bad sides. The Saturday afternoon, Tony Marinaro, Brian Wilde scoop. That created a lot of, I mean, just the impatience that there was this announcement at 5 o'clock that at 6:45 there'll be some news. No, I want it now.
Yeah.
And then the next morning with good friend of the show, Pat Hickey.
Good friend of the station.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Pat, I still look forward to speaking with you on air on my show. Doors always open. Even when I'm doing a post-game show, call in. I'm doing another one. I don't know how they're giving me the keys again, Jay.
Really?
March 10th after the Vancouver game.
What is wrong with these guys?
Again, I'm the designated successor.
Okay.
It's the State of the Union speech, and I'm the
Secretary of Agriculture.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, with my current, my hip little references.
Yeah.
I'm a political junkie.
So Twitter
can be great, and sometimes it's just terrible, and you need to look away, and you need to get off Twitter and go to a concert or turn on an album or read a book.
Read a book.
Chad Harback, The Art of Fielding. I'm 50 pages in, and I want to stop because I'm loving it so much that I'm already sad that there's only 400.
You don't want it to end. Yeah.
There's still 450 pages left in the damn book, Jay.
Oh, that's too bad. 450 pages.
To have picked up a book where the protagonist suffers a crisis of conscience because he can't make the throw from short to first rang very true after our conversation with Steve Sachs last week. Timing is everything, man.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
I've had that book on my night table for too long to admit. My sister bought me that book for my birthday. So that I've had that book since October. I started it on Sunday.
And that's what people on Twitter should be doing. Maybe reading a little bit more. The problem with Twitter is when it first started, it became kind of like Facebook, where it was a venue for people to kind of say what they were doing. I'm going to the store. I'm going to go buy some shoes. I'm going to, as Lewis Black said, and now it's become fodder for comedians. Now it's a completely different animal. Now it seems to be a race. It seems to be a race on who's got the scoop or how many followers I can get. And so people have come to say outlandish and ridiculous things. And there's a lot of lies. There's a lot of rumor. More innuendo, which we don't need, especially in this town. And it's just becoming, what kind of self-fulfillment is this, people? Put it in perspective. This is not, Twitter doesn't suck. A lot of these people's lives suck around Twitter.
Oh, Jay.
Well, no, I'm serious. I don't care. It's true. Okay, it's not about how many followers you have or if you can get this, you know, how fast you can type that story out there. Stop it. This is not what social media is supposed to be used for.
The how fast thing, Jay, that is an issue with journalists.
It's killing it. Yeah.
It's killing journalism.
It's killing journalism. And let me tell you something, and maybe some journalists. Now, I'm not a journalist. I don't claim to be, but maybe a journalistic entertainer.
You'd better act like one if you want to be on this show.
Okay, I will. I hope I have been so far.
I believe you have.
Okay. Nobody ever remembers who got the scoop. They will for the day,
Boom.
Nobody ever remembers who got the scoop.
They remember the story.
They remember the story. You know who remembers the scoop? Other journalists, or the journalist that got the scoop, so that they can sit around and, you know, at the bar and say, well, I got that one, and I got... I mean, it's like any other industry that you're in. When you do something good...
Andrew Berkshire on Twitter called it a frat.
It's a frat. It's a frat, and... Like I said, let's be a little bit more responsible and use this wonderful thing that we have, great technology that we have, in order to advance the human condition, not lower it to levels of innuendo and rumor and lies. That's all I got.
Can I tell you one of the things that I do love about Twitter?
Yeah.
Transloriate.
The babelfish is small, yellow, leech-like, and probably the oddest thing in the universe. It feeds on brainwave energy, absorbing unconscious frequencies and excreting a matrix of conscious frequencies to the speech centers of the brain. The practical upshot of which is that if you stick one in your ear, you instantly understand anything sent to you in any language.
Good evening, Transloriate. We missed you last week so much.
Greetings, gentlemen.
How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I am well. I feel the need to speak like a robot when I talk to you.
That's unnecessary.
But it's... I know I'm speaking to the host and that the babelfish has just been planted, and it confuses me so, I have to say. But Transloriate is a regular on The Kaufman Show. We're very lucky about it, and as we just alluded to, one of the best damn things about Twitter. You can follow Transloriate, TransLoriate, and every week Transloriate helps us clear up the murkiness that are Brett Laurie's tweets. Would that be about accurate, Transloriate?
That's accurate. Transloriate is definitive. Reality is frequently inaccurate, though.
Oh, we know. As late-night radio hosts, we know. So without any further ado, we're going to read out some of Brett Laurie's tweets. And Jay, this week it's me. Next week it's you. The week after will be me. But this is too much fun. We have to share the love.
Okay, I'm way better, though.
Let's see. Let's see. All right, Transloriate, you ready?
I'm prepared.
Brett Laurie tweet number one. At Lunchbox Hero 45, smooth criminal stealing bags. Wow. While he was still in the set. You should have stole third after you touched two. You had time.
Travis, your subterfuge was evident today. What a feat to advance to second base while the pitcher had yet to begin his delivery. It was with such stealth and speed, you could have continued advancing to third base.
Number two. Tee it high and let it fly. Hashtag yeah, buddy.
I am excited to be moments away from playing a round of golf.
And that's it.
Short and sweet. Yeah. Number three. Pujols has some serious sock. Hashtag turned 97 into 43 oft. Hashtag got him.
Albert Pujols illustrated his impressive strength by hitting a 430-foot home run on a pitch that was thrown at 97 miles per hour.
Pretty straight to the point.
Number four. Yo, at Joey Bats 19, we better have some sick beats before the Juegos this year. Hashtag DJ swing and a drive. Uh-huh. Hashtag cat daddy.
Jose, I trust the musical tracks to be played when we approach the batter's box will be of the highest quality.
Is that what cat daddy means? Number five. Cabeza thought? It amazes me that when I send this tweet out, it goes to 70,000 people. Lol. Hashtag ho ho. Hashtag weird.
If you will allow me a moment to reflect out loud, I am technologically odd that this message will be transmitted to 70,000 people.
Transloriate, thank you so much for your time this evening.
Time is an illusion.
Let's hope. Well, in that case, thank you for your presence.
Absolutely.
We'll speak next week.
Farewell.
Follow him on Twitter at Transloriate. make sense of a very messed up world.
He does. I think he's a Vulcan. Do you think he's a Vulcan? I think he's a Vulcan.
A Vulcan?
Yeah, the way he speaks. He's like Spock, you know. Come on, you ever watch TV?
Do I watch
Besides
TV?
Besides The Simpsons?
I remember Spock on a Simpsons episode.
That's right.
And he was on the monorail episode.
Hey, Spock, what do you want on your hot dog? Surprise me.
Jay with a Simpsons reference.
This is, huh?
I think I'm doing my job around here, people.
He's a Vulcan.
You're listening to The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to The Kaufman Show. That's Kiss Cam by Arkells. Do like that band. They're pretty awesome, Jay. And going to see them on Saturday night at the legendary Horseshoe Tavern in Toronto.
You sure you don't go to concerts every day? Because it kind of sounds like it.
No, that's just my on-air persona that fakes it. No other shows this week. Friday, Montreal. Saturday, Toronto. Should be a lot of fun. There'll be a bunch of former Kaufman Show guests playing at that concert. I know that Jeremy Taggart will be there from Our Lady Peace. Don't know if Buck's going to be there or not. I hope Buck 65's there.
Buck 65.
Hope I can run into Buck while I'm in Toronto. And, I have been guaranteed by Nick from Arkells that there's going to be some real good surprises and that it's well worth making the trip. It's a Juno benefit. And lots of bands, lots and lots and lots of bands. And I will report back to you next week.
All right.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be really, really fun. And coming up in a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Dave Barkley, who's a Toronto comedian, and he is also a finalist for the MLB Fan Cave. Can't wait to talk to him about that. Going to be super, super cool. Like I said, we need more Canadians in New York City. There aren't enough. I'm being very facetious when I say that. There are tons of Canadians running around that town.
I know.
Yeah.
My brother lived there for a long time. I lived there for a couple of months.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
With your brother?
Yes, in 2002 and Elias Tufexis.
Ah,
we,
good friend of the show.
We were doing a off-Broadway show that my brother wrote called Killing Jar Jar.
You're kidding, right?
No, I'm not joking. This is a true story. It was about a bunch of guys in line for the new Star Wars movie, and it may or may not stem from a true story, but you know, I won't say because, again, I'd like to get a date one of these days. Yeah.
By the way, can I just touch on something you said last week? We did a wonderful Simpsons show last week where we spoke with Steve Sachs and David Silverman, producer from the show, and a whole bunch of celebrity guests, including Elias Tufexis. And you alluded to the fact that The Simpsons it holds one back from getting dates. That hot girls don't watch The Simpsons. You are so wrong, man.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, you kind of did.
I said guys that geek out over The Simpsons don't get a lot of dates.
Well, we're trying to prove that wrong.
Okay. Why? What happened?
Oh,
did you hook up in the past week?
Well... We're on air, Jay.
David Kaufman.
Yeah, I hooked up with a big Simpsons fan.
Okay.
And there are many out there.
Okay.
That's all I was trying to say.
What's his name?
Oh! Such a funny guy, Jay Farrar.
Sorry.
We just said hot girls like The Simpsons.
Yeah, okay.
Everyone likes The Simpsons. That's the point, Jay.
Okay.
It's culturally relevant.
It is. I remember that quote that I just said there. It's been years since I've seen that episode, but I always remember that quote.
You know who wrote that episode? Conan O'Brien.
Conan O'Brien. Yeah, I should have known.
It's the monorail episode. It's a classic.
Yes, it is.
And, yeah, it was a real thrill last week. Check that out on thekaufmanshow.podbean.com or on iTunes. All of our stuff is up on iTunes. All our Gary Carter shows, our the special programming from last Thursday as well, which you made an appearance in. It was nice. I went back and listened to it. And I'm happy you called.
I'm happy I called, too.
It was a good thing. It was a good
thing. I had to.
Yeah,
you did. I had to.
You did. So we're going to take a break now-ish.
Now-ish?
Now-ish. And okay. Then we're going to come back and Dave Barkley. Dave for Cave.
Dave for Cave.
I've heard a rumor that I might hear this song next Saturday night at the Horseshoe. It won't be the first time I've heard this song at the Horseshoe. But I cannot wait to get back to those checkerboard floors. Toronto, I will see you this weekend. Be nice to me. This is The Kaufman Show. We'll be back. Welcome back to The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Jimmy G on the board. Have we said hello yet even on air, Jimmy?
You have now.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you, gentlemen?
Very good, very good. We've got John Kakalakis editing up a storm in the back room. He'll be joining us on air in a few minutes. But first, let's bring in Dave Barkley, who I've been following on Twitter for a couple of months now. Dave is the lone Canadian finalist for the MLB Fan Cave. My dream is to get into this MLB Fan Cave. And Dave is real close right now. There's only 30. It started with thousands of people trying to get in. And Dave for Cave is the hashtag. And we encourage you all to use it. And I am Dave for Dave for Cave. Dave Barkley, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, how you doing?
We're great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing really good.
Yeah, it's been a good week, huh?
Oh, you bet. Yeah. When I heard I missed the top 30 on Thursday, I jumped around a lot.
I bet. Now, I imagine that you've got the backing of your local ball club as well, right?
Yeah, the Blue Jays tweeted in my favor a couple times.
That's got to feel kind of good now.
And also Omar Vizquel and Darren Oliver retweeted me.
Hey, look at that.
Yeah. So I'm a pretty big deal.
Dave is a stand-up comedian, and you do stand-up, right?
Yeah, I do stand-up and some sketch as well.
Okay. Do you do any improv as well?
I do. I think on my feet a lot while I'm doing those two things.
It's important to do that in real life, too.
Yeah.
Like now.
Have fun. Yeah.
Now would be a good time.
You'd have to really plan everything out beforehand.
So tell everybody about the sort of the process of this, if you will.
I sent in a video and an essay because they were advertising the fan cave, I guess, in January. And I got a call from Major League Baseball, and they liked my video. And so I was in the top 50 from there. And after that, I had to do a campaign and get everyone to vote for me on the website. And you could vote an infinite amount of times. So when I saw that, it was a bit scary because I realized I'd be spending most of those 2 weeks just clicking on that vote button.
I'll tell you, Dave, when I saw that there was a day left, a few hours left, an hour left, I started clicking away, and you can't believe how many clicks you can do in a good 10-15 minute push.
Yeah, it's a real thrill.
You had a party, didn't you?
Yeah. I had a voting party with some of my close friends and my wife in my living room, and we just kept clicking and clicking, and we clicked until my wife fell asleep, and then my friends decided to go home. But I think that did a large part of putting it over the edge.
Is there a RoboCon vote joke that we can make in here?
I don't know. I wish I could, I don't know. If I had figured out a way to do it with a robot, it wouldn't have been the same, I don't think.
It never is, Dave. It never is.
It's never the same with a robot.
When will you find out if you've made it?
It's a good question. The whole thing's kind of shrouded in mystery. I'm going to be in Arizona in about 12 hours, and we're doing all these spring training challenges. And then once that's over, I guess they decide, based on how we dealt with the challenges, whether we're going to the New York City Fan Cave location.
Any idea what you're in store for in Arizona?
Not really. I know there's going to be writing involved and probably meeting baseball players. I'm hoping that there's going to be challenges where we have to eat a lot of Thai food.
That's a big baseball thing.
Yeah. I'm imagining, like, surrounded by cacti and we have to escape. I really have no idea.
now you're just using Arizona stereotypes, Dave. Come on.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to go to Arizona and learn the truth behind the stereotypes.
Well, it should be really cool. How long do they put you through the ropes down there?
For 3 days. I come back on Thursday.
Okay, so when you find out that you've won, will you come back and join us?
Yeah, I'd love to.
I think that would
That'd be fantastic.
I think we need to have an in with the MLB Fan Cave. If you get to win this, Dave, you it's pretty awesome. I mean, you know that it's pretty awesome, but you get to live in Chelsea for the summer.
Yeah.
And
pretty rad. I won't have much free time because I'll be watching baseball a lot.
Yeah, but that's okay. That's how we like to occupy our free time anyway.
Yeah, that's true. And, yeah, but I was going to do that anyway.
And I imagine you followed it last summer and you saw all the fun that those two guys had.
Yeah, it looked like a lot of fun.
Well, we are pulling for you. Everybody needs to hashtag Dave for Cave and get it out there. Send it the MLB Fan Cave. Is the Twitter handle MLB Fan Cave and Dave Bark BARC. Dave, we thank you, and this is for you, man.
Thank you so much. Dave Capistano, I hardly know him. These are the days I know, I know. These are the days I know. These are the days I know, I know. These are the days I know.
Most of us are Daves.
These are the days I know, I know.
We are the days you know, you know.
These are the days.
Dave Barkley, thank you so much. Best of luck to you.
makes it easier, easier to bear. You won't regret it, no, no. Young girl, they don't forget it. Love is their home, happiness.
I invented sweat, popping bottles, putting supermodels in a cab. Proof, I guess I got my swagger back. Truth, new watch alert, few blows. Or the big face rolly, I got two of those. Arm out the window through the city, I'm a new slow cutback.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Jimmy G on the board. John Kakalakis is here. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to join you gentlemen on the show.
Yeah, you're finally out of the side room, huh?
It's about time.
Yeah, you've earned your keep, man.
That nose is not pressed up against the screen in the other room there. He looks so closely at the screen. He is so into it. I love it.
John, you're doing a hell of a job for us.
I appreciate it.
John is the reason that you all can log on to iTunes or thekaufmanshow.podbean.com within usually a half an hour of this show finishing.
Real quick.
And listen to the podcast. And I'll tell you, John, we really appreciate it.
Well, the pleasure is all mine to contribute and get this show going, and people want to listen to us. And if some people, that, like I do have friends that are not able to listen because of the because they're working, so they want to get home and go on iTunes or on the website and get the show and listen to us.
Oh, thank you, sir. You're a good man. You're an Expos fan. You're a New York Giants fan.
That's for sure.
And you're riding quite the high right now.
And, yeah. And you know what's interesting with all these interesting guests that we're having on the show? I just get the impression that we're about to start a baseball season here in Montreal.
It does get that. It does have that feeling, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, it brings back great memories, you know.
Well, we will continue talking Montreal baseball because Montreal is a great baseball town with a wonderfully rich history. And I can't wait to get Conrad in studio and tell us about seeing Babe Ruth play at Tiger Stadium.
That'll be a thrill. I'm sure he's got some very interesting stories. He's told a couple of them on air already, and we'd love to hear them again.
Yeah, that was a thrill, and we'll definitely make sure that happens sooner rather than later. 514-790-0990, 1-866-896-2546. Let's go to our friend Expo in Redondo Beach. Hello, Steve. Thank you to Joel Plaskett for calming me down after that little technical, what was the word I used before from the Gourd song? I think it was an oopsie.
It was an oopsie.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, let's not use that anymore, okay?
Deal. If you won't do the falsetto, awesome.
Awesome.
Let's go back to Expo in Redondo Beach. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I think maybe, Jimmy, I'm sorry I said stuff about you sneezing.
There you go. See what happens?
So you were in the midst of telling a great story.
What I was saying was basically we were fortunate enough, our family, when I used to go to Expo games, we had extra tickets, and quite often we used to give them away. So fast forward to 1990, and now I'm an attorney. I'm in Los Angeles, and I'm going to this legal education class, and there's like 500 attorneys in this downtown hotel room, and I don't know, they're all my colleagues, but I don't know one of them. And I walk out at break into the hallway, and I go down to the lobby, and three different guys come up to me and say, Steve, you got any tickets? Steve, you got any tickets? They were all, how can I put this, basically scalpers from Montreal that had flown down for the Super Bowl that was in Los Angeles. And those were the people that recognized me, not the attorney.
That's awesome.
So that was my story. I got another sort of quick story.
Sure.
That in 1979, when the Expos, you know, had their first good year, and they just traded for Rusty Staub, it was July, and the buddy and I decided to go up and see the Giants play the Expos in a doubleheader, and we figured we'd pick up tickets, you know, at the game from the ticket window or whatever. And understand, in 1979, it's not like now. You just couldn't go on the internet and buy tickets in advance.
Well, there would have had to have been an internet.
Right, exactly. or a phone, even. You just couldn't do that. Only people that lived in the city could get tickets, and usually just at the stadium or Ticketron or whatever. So we just figured we'd get a couple tickets when we got to the game. Well, even though the Giants were having a miserable year, the game was basically sold out. Like 40,000 people showed up at this doubleheader. And we're wandering around looking to try and buy tickets. And this guy came up to us and said, do you need a couple of tickets? So I said, yeah, we sure do. How much are they? And he said, nothing. Just, you know, go enjoy the game. So it was kind of like good karma because I had done that in the past in Montreal quite often.
Yeah, I think any of us that had Expo season tickets were very well versed at giving them away.
Well, that's true. But in the 70s, maybe not so much as in the late 90s and 2000s. But in any event, we got great seats right behind the plate. And by the way, Candlestick Park, beautiful. It was a day-night doubleheader.
Oh, wow.
First game, the weather was beautiful. Second game, it was like being in Montreal in February. It was windy. It was cold. It was miserable. And I'll never forget, somebody hit a pop-up, and Duffy Dyer, when the sun was going down, he had like the sun in his eyes. And he was the Expos catcher. He probably only played 10 games for them, but he happened to be catching this. He was giving Carter a rest in the second game, I believe. Anyways, he's twisting and turning, but he made a great catch.
Do you remember a Giants game, an Expos Giants game, towards the end when I was listening to it? I can vividly remember sitting on my balcony on Côte de Neige. I lived on Côte de Neige at the time. And listening to Elliott Price scream at the top of his lungs. There was a pop fly, and it was an infield fly, and nobody knew it. And Elliott was just screaming. Like, I if it had been at the Big O, they would have heard Elliott going, hey, it's an infield fly!
Yeah, that's Elliott.
It was Elliott and Terry, and you know, everybody talks about Dave and Ken or Dave and Duke. For me, it's Elliott and Terry. And to have had Terry on last 2 weeks ago on the Thursday show was really a huge, huge honor for me. I don't think people realize just how big a part of baseball I consider Terry Haig for this town.
Yeah, he was definitely big. You guys have been having some tremendous guests.
Thank you, sir.
Scheduled for next week?
Next week, I can give you the scoop right now. Sean Farrell will join us in studio. Sean covered the Expos for many years for the Associated Press. We'll also be joined by Canadian rock legend Dave Bedini, which is really exciting. He's also an author. He wrote On a Cold Road, which was just nominated for Canada Reads. He also wrote Baseballissimo, which is a wonderful story about Italian baseball. It has been since turned into a screenplay written by Jay Baruchel.
Oh, the Mr. Goon.
Monsieur Goon.
Monsieur Goon himself.
I hear nothing but great things about that movie.
So am I. Is that going to be released in the United States, do you know?
I think it's at the end of March it will be released in the States. I think I saw a tweet about that. It might be available online streaming somewhere legally as well.
iTunes.
That's it. You can get it off iTunes in the States right now.
I know Chris at the Redondo Beach Cafe wanted to actually show it there, so maybe he'll get around to that.
Oh, pretty cool.
Next week, they're having a celebration. Anthony Calvillo is going to be in town, so they're doing an event, I think, a week from Thursday, honoring him.
At the Redondo Beach Cafe.
At the Redondo Beach Cafe. And this Saturday, they're having a Concordia reunion at the Redondo Beach Cafe. So lots of Montreal stuff going on here, too.
Are there more Canadians in L.A. than there are in New York?
How many are in New York? Do you know?
All I know is that when I went to see The Hip do a free show on Canada Day at Central Park in 2000, I didn't see an American for miles.
I would imagine there's more. I would imagine there's more in New York, but there's a ton here. 500,000 or something.
Wow.
I don't know the exact number, but a ton.
Huh.
Everywhere you go, you see. Well, you don't necessarily know they're Canadian until they're extremely polite.
Well put. Well put. And you moved there, what, late 70s, you said?
I came here originally in 79, went to law school here, and then I came back to Montreal for a few years in the 80s, you know, 83. So I missed the three big years, so to speak.
You must have had a real awesome opportunity out there for you to walk away from the Expos. It must have just broken your heart.
Yeah. It was very tough. Like I said, I think I've said before, in 79, 80, and 81, being here, you know, being completely cut off.
That's right. We did talk about that, how you would wait for the news to just give a score.
Right. Be much easier now. But unfortunately, you know, baseball orphan.
Let me, we all are. Hey, let me throw this out to you. If there was a Twitter and a Facebook in 2004, Steve, do you think that the Expos would have had more of a chance because the fans would have been able to mobilize better?
I think so. But I think a big part of the problem was, and justifiably so, and I'll use my father as an example, a season ticket holder since 69, just got really fed up.
Yeah.
The way we were treated. And, you know, it was difficult. And he loved baseball. He grew up loving baseball. It was just difficult for him to go down to the stadium. Obviously, he was way older than you guys. In fact, he used to tie this back into the show, even though I didn't hear the Robinson interview. He used to go watch Jackie Robinson play. Hmm. And my mother, around 10 years later, used to go to Dormier, too. In fact, this is kind of funny. My mother said we were so poor, you know, it was like whatever, 10 cents to get in. And then my father would say, well, when I went, I waited till the seventh inning when they let you in for free.
Steve, go online and Google Delormier Downs and Atwater Park, and you will come across a thesis written by somebody from Queen's University in the late 90s that I dove into this weekend, a good 130 pages, and it was well worth the read. It was all about the ballpark in Montreal as a necessity, if you will, and how Atwater Park was that place, and it was too far west, so they wanted something a little bit more east, and for the industrious, you know, the industrial side of town, the workers that could go to the ball games, that back then the ballpark was basically in Westmount. And I think it was 28 or 29 that they built Delormier Downs, and really a fantastic case study of what it took. And frankly, it's really not too far off from what needs to be done now. There's a lot more zeros on the numbers now than there were in 1929, but I see the parable.
I will check that out. And a quick question for Jay. Jay is there, isn't he?
I am here.
You finish it off with Jay's man on the street.
This is more personal. Jay, I'm trying to follow your brother on Twitter, but I can't figure out where the hell he is.
Well, I actually don't know where he is either. No, I'm kidding. What do you mean? His handle is at Anakin.
No, that's not what I mean.
Oh.
I think he's taping some video or doing
song. Okay. I thought you actually
I couldn't figure that out. On a reservation or out of the country?
He's on a reservation up north. He's currently filming a video for his song Shaughnessy Village. He also did a live show up there. There will be more details to follow on this. He's out of cell phone range, so I haven't been able to call him. That's how far up north he is. There's no cell phone up there. So he's working on his video right now. He did a live show up there as well. He's doing a little bit of charity work. He'll be back, and I guess we'll have him on the show and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, sometime in the next week or two, I'm hoping to discuss that with Anakin, and hopefully we can get somebody from the HIP on as well, because the HIP just did something very similar. They were in Fort Albany and Casseshawan, which we all know from the news lately.
Well, you may all know.
Yeah, right. Not you in California.
Steve,
there's a bit of a native crisis here, and it's something that let's call a spade a spade. There's a seriously awful crisis here with the way that natives are treated. And for some reason, while the government continues to neglect, we are seeing the art community, the music community, respond.
And that's what my brother is exploring right now in that song.
So we will discuss that with Anakin hopefully very, very soon.
That sounds like another great show upcoming.
Oh, thank you, Steve. We'll catch up soon. You check out our interviews on the podcast, okay?
I will.
All the
and
best.
Thank you for doing them.
Of course.
Bye.
Of course. We enjoy this as much.
It's what we do, man.
This is awesome, man. let's just talk to Expos every week. And
yeah, he's great.
Let's remind ourselves that this town cares about baseball, that it doesn't just care about hockey, And Steve mentioned his dad there and how his dad got fed up at the end. And to go back to the start of the show tonight, that's what I'm worried about with Habs fans. When I got my season tickets for the Canadiens, it was the year that the Expos left, 2004. Season tickets were available for purchase back then, Jay. The Habs had been through some lean years, and not every seat was full all the time, like it has been. People are going to get, if the product continues to be subpar, this isn't Toronto. Toronto, they will fill up the ACC no matter how bad the Leafs are for as long as Toronto remains the only hockey team in the horseshoe.
The thing that's different about this year is that it's not a progressive downfall. It's a very sudden one from last year. I mean, sure, they were out in the first round last year, but they almost beat the, well, what would later be the Stanley Cup champions.
But that's the point. There have been a lot of teases, if you will,
right,
that mask what's really going on.
Right.
So last year it was losing in overtime in Game 7. The year before, it was riding Yaroslav Halak
to the Eastern Conference Final.
Right, to the Final Four, or the almost to the Final Four. No, it was the Final Four.
It was
against Philadelphia. Yeah, it was the Final Four, exactly. It seems weird to say, Jay, but they're illusions. They're flukes. And the team needs to be a team. The team cannot continue to take the fans for granted, and the fans cannot continue to take the city, the team for granted.
That's right.
It's really, I know that the Habs are the Habs, and we put them on this pedestal, and they are the Saint Flanelle and le bleu blanc rouge. I grew up thinking the same thing about the Expos.
You're not going to be able to ride a goalie every year.
No.
Ask Cam Ward. You know, you can't. You just can't do it. So, you know, they seem...
Ask Patrick Waugh.
From what we heard from Mr. Gauthier today, there's some tweaking going on, and they're preparing for next year.
Tweaking, huh?
Tweaking. There's a lot of tweeting going on as well.
Like picking up Rusty Staubitz?
Rusty Staubitz. I like it. Le petit orange.
Oh, I don't know if that will catch on or not.
It's not going to catch on.
No way.
No. No. Well, he's going to be playing tomorrow night, I believe.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they've called him up as well as Mr. Jeffrey.
Yeah, that's kind
of... The baby
of,
boom boom.
That's kind of the baby... No, that
yeah,
cannot
that's
be
what it. They're starting, the baby boom.
No.
Yeah, that's what they're starting.
No, awful. Awful. That's terrible.
Well, I'm excited. I want to see some of these young guys. I want to see...
I do, too. I wish we'd seen them a month ago.
that would have been nice.
I want to see Aaron Palaszczuk move to Montreal and not have to go to Hamilton and back and Hamilton and
How
back.
How many trips has this guy taken back and forth?
If you guys don't read The Active Stick or follow her on Twitter, you have to. Laura, The Active Stick is her Twitter handle. She has a fantastic blog. She is hilarious, very astute Montreal Canadiens fan, and wrote a great little story about Aaron Palaszczuk. And I think one of the lines, and I'm just recalling off memory, but it was, you wake up, it smells like cigarettes and entitlement. You must be in Montreal.
Nice.
Cheers to you, Laura. That's it's required reading for any Habs fan out there, especially if you have a sense of humor. And frankly, you'd better right now.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, I've seen a lot of great one-liners on Twitter as well. And that's another thing that Twitter is great for. The beautiful one-liners that are out there. There are a lot of funny people out there. And especially during the Oscars, it was very, very amusing.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Hey, were you following Tag during the Oscars? Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace?
Yes. Yeah.
He absolutely kicked the Grammys and the Oscars' asses.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
This is R. Kell's Agent Zero. Absolutely adore this song. Hope to hear it next Saturday night. This is The Kaufman Show. Anybody else go back to the Cosby Show when they hear this?
No.
That's my first memory of this song was the Cosby family doing the kids did a show for I think Cliff and Claire it was for the grandparents.
It was for the grandparents that used to come down the stairs.
That's
and
right.
That.
And Rudy coming in, baby.
Yeah. Any way you can be introduced to Ray Charles is a good way.
Damn straight. And the Cosby Show is a pretty good one.
Hello, oh. John.
Hey. It wasn't Jimmy.
Sneezes to the left of me, coughs to the right.
There's a lot of sick Greeks in studio. I don't know what's happening.
Oh, my goodness.
Something in the olive oil.
I'm surrounded.
You are surrounded.
I am surrounded.
You are surrounded by Greek Gentiles, my Hebrew friend.
Greek Gentiles?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Don't
please,
be scared.
Please.
Don't be scared.
I need to compose myself.
Are you okay now?
Yeah.
Was it my Ray Charles impression?
No, it was calling yourselves Gentiles.
Oh.
I think that's just not a term I use.
No?
No. I feel like it's kind of derogatory.
Yeah, well, whatever.
All right. Yeah, all right.
Like I care.
That goes out the window.
Yeah,
right?
Who cares?
Fair enough.
Yeah.
John Kakalakis is in front of the microphone and just made a very interesting point. We were following up on our little Habs talk from before the break and about how both sides take each other for granted in this wonderful push and pull that we have in this city. John?
Yes, and I was talking about in the late 90s, if people can go back on memory lane, when Alain Vigneault was coaching the team, there was a lot of empty seats right before the sale of the team. And, I mean, it's a fact. Nobody wanted to buy the team over here. But when Trevor Linden was here, when Martin Ruzinski and Brian Savage were scoring 15 goals in the month of October.
Mr. October.
I used to laugh at that.
I was always a Brian Savage fan, though. I still remember the big goal he scored for Canada in the quarterfinals at the Albertville Olympics.
When the late, great Sergei Zhultok was the leading scorer on the team.
Sergei Zhultok, that was sad when he passed away.
Yes, it was.
That was that in Latvia or in Ukraine or somewhere? It was. I remember a bunch of players made a pilgrimage to his gravesite. He passed away on the ice, didn't he? He died during a game, I think.
Yeah. I'm not sure of the exact circumstances, but I know it was sudden. Yeah, it was in Latvia. He's from Riga, Latvia.
Okay. There you go.
And, the story is not there, but yeah.
George, I can't repeat what you just wrote on Twitter, but I'm not scared of the Greeks. What's to be scared of?
We're in no position to intimidate anyone right now. But we do sneeze a lot, apparently.
Oh, all right. Well,
and cough.
That's
and
right.
Cough.
That's right. Well, nothing but the utmost of professionalism here on the Kaufman Show.
The late 90s, when we had about 7 or 8 fighters on the team, there was, I mean, half the Montreal Canadiens were goons.
Was this the Juha Lind era?
Well, no, you're talking about guys like, you had Brad Brown and, Stéphane Quétal wasn't a goon, but he'd fight. Turner Stevenson would fight. You had Dave Manson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and Chris Murray and guys like that. All guys willing to drop the gloves. Now, I'm all for team toughness, but there is such a thing as too much team toughness where you completely rid yourself of any kind of skill.
Well, that was a whole lot of guys protecting Saku, right?
Yeah, everybody wanted to protect Saku, apparently. So
it made his 5'7" not seem so small.
Yeah, so there have been some bad times in the last few years, and yeah, there were empty seats at the time.
But memories are short, Jay, and you have trouble. It took John coming in here and reminding us of the thousands of empty seats. You don't think of that when you think of the Montreal Canadiens. You think of a team that's really sold out the Bell Centre pretty much nonstop since 1996.
Yeah. Well, there was a lull there for
but
a
there
little
was,
while.
There was.
The Patrick Poulin era.
But it gets swept under the rug.
It gets forgotten about
because this is the team that's won 24 Stanley Cups and lives off its laurels, rests on its laurels, if you will. Gets a little tongue twisted around 2 a.m, but hey, that happens. I don't know what to say. And yeah, the Habs are in last place. Habs did me a solid last week by paying tribute to Gary Carter. So I have trouble ragging on them too much. Also because I've seen this coming for years. Ask anyone who knows me, Jay. It breaks my heart, but I've been down on the Habs for a long time. And 2 years ago was great. It was great to... I've told the story to you on air before of sitting in the bar in Squamish during the Olympics and watching the Habs play the Ducks in Anaheim. I remember Jimmy looked up the score. The Habs were down. Price was in. Price was pulled. Halak came in. Habs won the game. And the momentum started to build, and everybody got excited. And I came home from Vancouver, and within 2.5 weeks, the Habs were playing Washington and Pittsburgh in the playoffs, and the whole city was alive. This city demands consistency, though. Going to the Final Four 2 years ago isn't enough.
Well, we've been spoiled, and so...
Well, we haven't been. The generations before us.
Yeah. Well, I myself can remember 2 Stanley Cups.
So can I.
For me, that's...
Well, one. I don't really remember 86. I remember losing in 89. That was... The 8-year-old Dave Kaufman was real sad
the
that night.
Yes. Well, the 10-year-old Jay Farrar saw them win in 1986, and I remember it very clearly. And in my lifetime, they've actually won 5 Stanley Cups in the time that I've been alive. I only remember 2 of them.
Right.
And for me, that's spoiled. So yeah. We demand. Montrealers will not stand by and watch a losing team. And eventually, 6, you think, Jimmy?
If you include 1976.
I don't.
When were you born in 76?
In December.
Oh, that's 5.
Okay. Thank you, Jimmy. Yeah. No, he's right. He's right. He knows when his Stanley Cups were. That's good. No. Yeah. People are demanding here, and they have a right. Look what happens. You put a losing team on the... Or you put them in a bad stadium. People are not going to go. They don't care. They won't pay the ticket price. And it's only a matter of time now. I mean, hey, when we went to that game last Sunday...
Yeah.
There were some empty seats around us.
So much so that
Elias Tufexis was able to come down and join us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for...
for baiting him out completely, yeah.
Thanks for wearing the Habs jersey and messing up our style, Elias.
Yeah, we kicked him out quickly. As soon as we saw that still of us on Hockey Night in Canada, we told him to get the hell out of here.
By the way, I was told that the reason that there were so few Expos jerseys in the crowd that day was because most of the tickets were already sold well before Gary Carter even passed away. There was a big hockey tournament in the city that weekend, and a lot of the tickets that were on the street had already been scooped up. So I know there were others. I know that there were more in the upper levels than there were in the lower. I felt like we were able to pick out the people in Expo stuff in the lower level, and it makes sense why we were all over the TV that day. We were the only ones in the Reds.
Yeah.
In our Expos gear.
We stood out like a bunch of morons, too. But
okay, but that sucks that's what it's called now. Because that whole building is filled with people wearing the jersey of a last-place team.
Yeah.
And we're the morons?
No, I mean, I'm saying because of the texting and all that.
Ah.
Yeah, between you and my brother.
Excuse me?
Okay, I might have been texting a little bit.
Just a couple, right?
Just a couple of times. But hey, listen, enjoy the last quarter of the season. For what it is.
Watch the young kids and remember.
Watch the young kids. Think about the future. Enjoy the excitement because you're going to see a little bit of passion in hockey from these young guys.
37 years of Major League Baseball in Montreal. And 34 of those 37 years, 32 of those 37 years, the team did not have a chance almost from the start. And yet people still managed to take joy out of it. Watch the young kids come up. Wait till next year. You know, we played that Brooklyn Dodgers song before. Wait till next year was the mantra of the Brooklyn Dodgers. Hope springs eternal. And thank God for that. Because, you know, everybody's talking about this 2013 draft and how the Habs have loaded up for the 2013 draft. And it's supposed to be a good draft. I've always wanted to play Exit on the radio. This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be right back. Show. Final segment. Feeling that the till the last customer is served. I like that mantra that George came up with, and I think we have that last customer on the line. By the way, that is the wonderfully talented. Where's my speaking? I've lost my ability to speak.
Okay.
Sarah Jane Scouten. The album's called Magpie Waltz. That song is called Poverty Wind. Good times are found in a bottle and a Ziploc bag. Great song. And hopefully we can get Sarah Jane Scouten and her band in studio sometime soon.
That would be awesome.
I'd like to hear it live. 514-790-0990 if you want to get in your last thoughts before.
Mesdames et messieurs, Danielle Salvis, ladies and gentlemen, last call.
Well done. Well done. Let's go to Mike in St. Leonard. Good evening, Mike.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Not bad. I was listening to you guys, of course, and hearing you talk about the Canadians and kind of feel that I'm kind of in the same place where you guys are. A couple of weeks ago, I was out with my wife to the Cache Ospor in the West Island, and a couple of years ago we were there. You couldn't even get a seat to watch a Habs game, and now it's not even – people are just watching it in the background, another Canadians loss. It's almost like if it's gone from people being – passionate to just losing a bit of that to not caring, which is even a worse spot, I think, for the Canadians to be in.
That's the dangerous spot, Mike. That's the spot that leaves, that left us without a baseball team.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. People have lives, and there's Montreal's a great city for other things to do, and people will find other things to do if their attention isn't kept captive. And the thing about it, too, when I think about the way the Expos ended, and the way the Canadians are, and I look at the franchises, and of course it's a different sport, but the Canadians have benefited from a playoff system that allows mediocrity to go through, and the Expos never got to take advantage of any of that.
That's right.
I mean,
there was no wild card for the Expos when they were competing.
In the Hockey League, 16 out of the 30 teams are in. I mean, in baseball, that would have been, imagine the Expos would have been almost every year.
Well, how about now that they're adding a second wild card spot?
Exactly. I mean, they've understood now that, I mean, it's exciting and it's good revenue and it allows franchises that could be on their last legs at least get a breath of some playoff play. But I look at the Canadians now, and I know there's a lot of things positive about going in the future and stuff, but people have lives. They have other things to do. And it's not that people don't care or don't want to care. I mean, I look at it, and, you know, even the other night I was hearing one of their going back in history there. I know they do that once in a while, and they do from this year what happened. And I remember they were mentioning the Eric Weinrich to Boston for Patrick Taveras. And I think I felt like throwing up.
I bet.
That is such – even though I'm thinking – even that upset me, man. I was like, what? That is terrible, man. That's even terrible now. I mean, this has been terrible for so long. I mean, the thing about the Canadians is they had money, they had a budget, and before the salary cap, they never took advantage of it. They never went out there and signed guys.
Mm-hmm.
They just kind of were like, we're the Canadians, show up, pay $200, pay $12 for a beer, sit down and shut up.
No, but it wasn't that kind of money back then. That's the difference. Like, I love looking at that ticket stub that I have from Game 5 in 93 at the Forum.
Yeah.
My $52 red to see the Habs win the Cup.
Yeah, but you know what? When you take it into stride at the time, that was a lot of money then, too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
Yeah, but it wasn't the $500 that seat would be today.
Exactly. You know, I mean, it's just insanity. And you know what? If you want to charge insane stuff like that, you gotta put up, man. Because the thing about Montreal and Toronto, all that management, all the ex-GM still involved, and you know what? I look at Phoenix. They're like the Montreal Expos, owned by the league, and still finding a way to do it.
Hmm.
And then you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, Montreal Canadiens, money coming out of their back pockets. They can't get it right. They can't even make the playoffs. Both franchises are nonsense now.
But the whole thing is, I mean, if the Canadiens were to miraculously make the playoffs and finish eighth and sneak in again, that's kind of self-defeating.
It is. The whole Halleck thing was self-defeating.
But it's weird to think about it in retrospect, because at the time, it's one thing to be swept up in that emotion, and I was at all those games, and it was wonderful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even 2 weeks ago, I was looking at it on the computer, just looking at some of the replays on YouTube, and, I mean, it was awesome. Let's be honest. It was great. Like you mentioned before, the whole city felt it. People were happy, man. I mean, it was a great distraction from real life.
But you know what? For me, it felt like the Olympics just continued. It was just this one long magical winter.
Exactly. But you know what? That set the team back maybe another 5 years.
Yeah.
Things that are not being dealt with still aren't being dealt with. And you know what? It's one thing when you have a team and the fans complain. That's okay. But when the fans say, we need a number one center for 15 years and you don't do it, I mean, what do you want to say?
But it's not about the fans and what the fans want. It should be that the management knows that a premier first-line center will be a draw, will help the team improve. There are a million different factors, Mike, that you would think would make a team want to make a push like that.
Well, this is what I think frustrates people, is that we have no clue where they come up with some of the stuff they come up with.
Right.
I mean, even that trade for Cabrelet. I mean, it was great. He scored had a point in the first night. But when you look at it and you take a sit back and you look and you think, wow, nobody wanted this guy, and yet we're involved in this again. I mean, how many losers are you going to get on your team? How many guys are you going to – I mean, you try and analyze these things. You try and be optimistic about it.
Oh, you'll make yourself crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And so you know what? You move on. There's other stuff going on. There's other sports going on. There's other stuff to follow. And, I mean, for you guys, I know it's going to be – hard. I mean, you guys just got the rights for the Canadiens, and you need to see some success. I mean, it's an investment for your radio station
as well, too.
Absolutely.
Hey, I'll tell you right now, the Habs coming in here and us becoming TSN Radio has been huge.
That's huge.
For me. Huge for me.
Yeah.
The amount of guests that I'm able to get now because of the name TSN.
It's great.
It's huge. It's huge. And it's a wonderful honor to have the Montreal Canadiens on this station. Regardless of how they're playing,
exactly.
It's still really cool to be the home of the Habs.
Well,
the thing is that when people think of the Habs, they don't think of the Habs now.
No.
They still think of Rocket Richard.
Well, you know what? I was born in 72. I saw 86 as the one that I remember. Of course, 89 I remember. 93 I remember. And then I remember many years where I did lose interest. And when you mentioned like some of the teams before that Alain Vigneault was coaching, a lot of that I didn't pay attention to. And I did lose interest. As much as I love hockey and I love watching it, I did lose interest, man. I wouldn't even, you know, you just stop listening to it on the radio slowly. All of a sudden you're not looking at the schedule to figure out where they are or what night they're playing. And you just kind of go on to other things, and you're not as captive, and it takes a lot to get you in. I mean, they have a great marketing department, man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, these guys pulled us in like suckers, man. I mean,
but it's not like that. It's not about us being suckers. It's about appealing to someone's nostalgia, which,
yeah,
frankly,
exactly.
We're guilty of on this show with all of our Expos talk.
Yeah, but we miss that. We don't have a present-day version.
Yeah.
So we're trying to keep that alive, and the good memories and the good feelings, the smell of the stadium. You're trying to relive it. You don't have anything to compare it to.
Oh, I mean, the smell of the stadium, man.
I mean, you know, you walk in there, you know, do I want Kojak tonight or Pastaveri, maybe some Kentucky Fried Chicken. You're loving it, you know. You just remember walking in, you know. But now, you know, with the Canadians, they're there, but they're not, you know. Even the players aren't even interested anymore. But
well,
you know,
because everybody hits their fill, Mike.
Yeah, that's it, you know, exactly.
The players realized a lot earlier than the fans when this season really ended.
Yeah, that's the problem.
But you know what? That makes sense that they would understand it quicker than the fans. Their expectations are realistic.
But you know what?
They're not Habs fans. They're hockey players.
That's it. It's a good job. Great job. But let's be honest. Season's over, man. They're out of here.
Mike, can we offer you a $50 gift certificate to Brewtopia Brew Pub on Crescent Street?
Sure, man. I'd love it.
Awesome.
Thanks.
We'll see you down there.
You bet.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
That was the call of the night.
That was the call of the night.
Brought to you by Brewtopia.
I love Brewtopia.
Yeah.
Mighty fine establishment. One of my favorite places in the city to catch live music and...
The Brew.
You say that kind of like Brett Laurie.
The Brew.
The Brew, man. Got him. The Brew. We'll have to get Translaurie to... explain that for us next week.
I enjoy several beverages at my local Brewtopia. That's what that meant.
My microbrewery establishment, I think.
My microbrewery establishment.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to work on
local that. Establishment, yes. Excellent.
Doesn't feel like... See, now, do I mention the time right now? Because people listen on the podcast, and this could be any old time.
Right.
And me sitting here go, oh, look at the time. Oh, how the time passes. It's 2:20 in the morning.
Yep.
Doesn't feel it.
Yes. Speak for yourself, Kaufman.
Okay, fine. For me, it feels like an hour ago.
No, it went by real quick today, and it was...
Marquise was on 3 hours ago.
Yeah.
Does not feel like 3 hours ago that we were speaking with Marquise Grissom.
No, I'm still stoked about that.
I can't believe Marquise called us basically from his honeymoon.
I know. He told me he had just gotten back into the country, just got back to Atlanta on Sunday, and... Call me the next day.
I love Marquise Grissom and I love Delino DeShields. And it was awesome to talk to both of them in the same show.
And Sharon Robinson. Love her too.
Yeah, but I didn't grow up loving Sharon. I grew up loving her dad.
No, but she impressed me. She had such a pleasant demeanor.
Yeah.
You know, talking about such a serious subject, but talking about it with conviction and a lot of integrity and you know, optimism.
For a studio full of white guys, I hope we did our best.
Yeah,
our
listen,
Black History tribute.
Yeah,
we're
not going to pretend to.
We did all we could, and we hope that we didn't step on any toes and that we brought up some points that aren't normally brought up. That's what we try to do. Let's take our last call of the night. This is our friend Eric.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you, Eric?
I'm doing fine. Thanks. I wanted to say thanks for that stick, Dave. I got it this week.
All right.
Awesome stick.
Oh, well, then we can thank our good friend Danielle Desjardins at Sherwood for providing you with that stick. And I hope, unlike the... Close your damn car door, Eric. Come on.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, God. Okay, you heard that, too?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
All these little beeps and stuff. I mean,
I know,
tonight I've been...
That's not good for radio. Sorry, guys.
It's 2:20 in the morning. I thought I was getting some sort of Morse code message from someone.
Waking yourself up, AJ.
Yeah. I hope that stick doesn't break.
No, it shouldn't. Anyway, there's no more ice to play. Anyway, two cents on the Habs. I think the real problem that the Habs have in the past years is that there's no old school players, and there's no, in French you say, y'a pas d'appartenance. There would be no history, but with Blake Jeffrion coming back and the number that he chose, I think that it's going to show up in the next couple of years. He chose the number 57 for his grandfather and his
great-grandfather.
Yeah. And I think that's a good direction that the Habs are going in, and especially picking up another big guy today that'll help Ryan White, I think. And great show. And for the past couple of weeks, I wanted to talk to you about the book of the Art of Fielding, and I haven't got a chance. And you spoke about it today. I bought it over the internet about 2 weeks ago. I'm waiting for it. And I heard about Jay Reynolds talking about it on ESPN Radio and the interview that he did. And it got me to buy the book, man. It's I read the back of the cover, and it's an awesome book, man. If everybody wants to read a good book,
That's a good book to read.
We could do a little book club if you want. Anybody wants to catch up to me? I just started it, and I'm going slow because I want to enjoy it.
Yeah, it sounds like a really good book. Like I said, I ordered it over the internet. I read the back of the book, and it seems like a very interesting book. I'm not a reader myself, but that's a book that I'm willing to read. So with that, guys, have a good night, and it's a pleasure listening to you guys, like as always.
Eric, thank you so much for your call. We look forward to catching up with you soon, and enjoy that hockey stick.
I wonder if he's used it.
Well, I don't know. He just got it, which oh, that's awesome. Look at that. Sherwood. We'd like to thank Sherwood from Sherbrooke, Quebec.
Yeah.
A fine, fine Canadian company.
Well done, Dave. I'm not sure what he was getting at with that nostalgia thing. I mean, I think all the Canadians have done in the last few years is celebrate the heritage and the old players. They retired several numbers.
Yeah, I'd rather see it
go the
other
way. It's
probably
been a distraction from the team, actually.
I'd rather see it go the other way.
Yeah, let's look into the future now. I mean, all the numbers are up. There may be a couple more that could go up, but I don't see any anytime soon. We've had our 100th anniversary. Let's move on. Let's look to the future.
I want to thank all of you for calling in tonight, all of our guests. We got a long list to run through before we start the song, Jimmy, but I want to thank Marquise Grissom, Sharon Robinson.
Awesome.
Delino DeShields, Mike Cohen, Wes Marskell, The Darcys. By hook or by crook, get yourself into that show on Friday night. I know he said it sold out, but you could just mug a bunch of people at the door and steal their tickets and get in.
Oh, yeah.
Translaureate, we always appreciate him. And Dave Barkley, let's not forget about Dave for Cave. I want to see a Canadian in the fan cave.
Sure.
Stick it to those Yanks.
Jeez, Kaufman. What the hell's wrong with you?
I don't know.
Oh, boy.
I don't know. We have our moments. And Jimmy, John Kakalakis, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
It's been fun. Mr. Plaskett, take us out.
Listen up, kid, it's not what you think. Stayed out too late, had a little too much to drink. Walk home across the bridge when the marquee shut down. There's a reason that I love this town. Nobody cares how much money you have. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house if your house burns down. There's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band in the early days. We all hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel, we're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you understand. Face down in our suit, some French restaurant. I saw Rivière du Loup last night at a tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I
You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. On behalf of Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman, and we'll see you next Monday night.
I don't know.
What'd that sound like?